All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, and here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. every weekday morning. And it's Wednesday, which means it's Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday here. That means you select the, you know, because every morning, you, the listeners, select what music bumps we're going to play when we come back from commercials and the news and such. And there's a theme every morning, and today is Wildcard Wednesday, which means you request any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. Get those requests in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200 for Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, so we're here this morning, and coming up in just a little bit, right after the 1:30 news, Kevin Powell is going to join us. He does sports afternoons here on WGN with the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeBlantis. And I don't know if there's any sports stories that Kevin and I can talk about. I don't know if there's a, if there was a sports story that happened yesterday that that we're going to lead with. I'm not. I don't know. It's tough. It's a tough call whether there's an important sports story to maybe that happened yesterday that we'll talk about. So, yeah. Anyway, Kevin's going to join us to talk sports. I just want to know, I want everybody to know that Dan booked Kevin before what happened yesterday happened. We had him booked already. So it's just sometimes there's something in the air. So Kevin's going to join us. It is, you know, yesterday was election day, last night, election night. And you heard all the coverage here on WGN. We're going to do a quick recap in a few minutes, just with the telling you some of the results of what happened for Election Day yesterday in the midterms. And so we'll do that in a little bit. So since it was Election Day, we're going to talk about political movies a little bit later on to tie it in with that and talk about some of the best movies ever made about politics and maybe some of the worst movies ever made about politics. That will be coming up. And we're going to talk about some famous celebrity endorsements of products. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text, and of course, Wildcard Wednesday requests. So let's say hello to my great producer, Dan Shugru. Hello, Dan.
Howdy, Nick.
How are you?
Good, man. How about yourself?
Good. I see you're sporting the I voted wristband.
I did. I left it on so I could talk to Emily about it. So,
oh,
yeah.
What was that conversation like?
It was good. She's just like, you know, what is it? And I did my best to try to explain the whole thing to a three-year-old, but
yeah,
she got a kick out of it before we went back to the Beauty and the Beast book. So,
yeah. Well, that's cool, man.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Cool. All right. I didn't wear my sticker.
So oh, you got a sticker?
I got a sticker.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I did. I got a sticker. And some places we're not giving out the stickers.
Right, right. They explained that there was an interesting tweet because, you know, people were like, hey, I wanted a sticker. And, you know, they do the wristbands because so many people would put them on the doors of the places they voted that janitors were like, we're not going to be a polling place anymore because.
Oh, is that right? Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's what. Yeah.
So. Well, I guess they cleaned it up at my polling place.
I guess so.
That's interesting. How many stickers and wristband selfies did you see?
A lot, thankfully.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the turnout was incredible, and we can talk a little bit about that as well on Election Day. So, Dan, we're here till 5. Wildcard Wednesday, we'll get Dan, keep track of how many TV theme songs we get.
Yes.
So that, which is always, we always get weird stuff. That's why it's Wildcard Wednesday. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And let's go to the newsroom. It's Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Hey, good morning, sir.
How are you, man?
I'm doing well.
Good, good, good. And we're going to just do a little result stuff after the break.
Sounds good.
You know, just to get everybody up to speed.
By the time you get to that break, we may have some breaking news to report out of Wisconsin.
What a nutty.
It's close.
It's
but
pretty
it's
crazy,
not
right?
As close as it was 5 minutes ago when they were 1,000 votes. Now we've went from 97% reporting up to 99%, and Tony Evers, the Democrat, has pulled ahead by more than 30,000 votes. Like I said, 10 minutes ago, they were neck and neck at 1,000 votes separating them. So
yeah.
We'll see this last few counties.
And that's for the governor.
That's correct.
In the state of Wisconsin. So, all right. You know, I know a lot of people love the, election night stuff. Lots like to watch the you know, the results coming in. And I was telling you, Dan, in the car that I was watching. I was mostly watching, you know, I didn't watch it all because I wanted to get some sleep. But I watched, when I did watch most of it, I watched it on Channel 9. I watched the Channel 9 coverage. But then I would switch to the national coverage. I would go to like CNN or something. And it just, it's like an endless amount of guys like standing in front of maps, like touching the maps and zooming in on different districts and stuff. And that goes out, and they just do that for like 15 minutes. It's just Wolf Blitzer walking around and a guy next to a map, you know, zooming in on different districts and which are
John King, typically,
which are red, which are blue. And then they cut back to Blitzer. Blitzer makes an announcement. Maybe they have a, you know, they have a result or something. Then they cut back to Captain Map and stuff. It's just like, it's, you know, I much preferred the Channel 9 coverage. Well, first of all, it's local. So, you know, you're getting local coverage of, you know, the elections here that you're interested in personally, you know. But then they were doing, obviously, they were covering the national scene as well. But there weren't a whole lot of maps with, you know, like zooming in on the districts. And that's just been, that's the MO of all of the cable and network coverage. So, and, I did watch, The Daily Show, which was live. They were live, last night. And their coverage was really fun. And Trevor, I love Trevor Noah. He's just the best. And also, Colbert went live too, and so did Kimmel. But Kimmel was a half an hour late because ABC Channel 7 went a half an hour. They went a half an hour long on their coverage. So Kimmel didn't start, but Colbert, which I'll watch in the morning, was live. So that'll be interesting to see how they handle it on election night. So, but great coverage here on WGN and all the commentary and all that cool stuff. So here's what we're gonna do: we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to just give you the latest, and maybe something's happening, and maybe something even more is happening in Wisconsin. Vic's in the newsroom keeping an eye on all that stuff. When we come back, we'll just get you up to speed on what happened in election night for the midterms in 2018. And that's all coming up right here on WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. And much more coming up. After 1:30, Kevin Powell is going to join us. He does sports for the afternoon show here, the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis. And we're going to talk sports right after the news. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for Talk and Text and Wildcard Wednesday. You're made Wildcard Wednesday. That's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. All right. Following the results as they come in on election night, and doing it here at the station all night long, and obviously into the early morning when not everything has been decided. Vic Vaughn is in the newsroom, and Vic, we've got has anything else happened in that Wisconsin race?
Well, that we still are at 99% of the votes counted, so we're still going. Wow. And like I said, within the last 30 minutes, Nick, it went from Scott Walker having a lead of about 1,000 votes to now Evers, Tony Evers, the Democratic challenger. There is about 30,000 votes ahead now, so we'll see. That's a close race.
Man, that is really close. Yeah. That is really. We had a lot of close races.
A lot of them. And a big night, you know, it was a high turnout this year.
Yeah.
A lot of voters came out across Illinois. We'll stick to Illinois for now. But a big night for Democrats. I mean, they swept all six statewide offices in Illinois. They're expected to retain control of both of the houses of the General Assembly in Springfield. You have a Democrat defeated Bruce Rauner for governor. J.B. Pritzker, our new governor. Yeah, so he defeated the Republican Governor Bruce Rauner.
And, boy, he and Rauner, less than an hour after the polls closed.
It was a sound defeat, and he knew very early. Yeah, about it was less than an hour, actually, after the polls closed that he conceded. So
So
Pritzker will be sworn in January. Just throw that out.
Exactly. Yeah. Am I not mistaken when I say that that was the most expensive campaign?
Yes, in Illinois. I believe it was.
Yeah.
That was, you know, the trend.
Yeah.
And that trend goes nationwide. It's very expensive. race this year. You know, and you also have Democrat Lauren Underwood. She defeated four-term incumbent congressman Randy Hultgren. So she's
the first congresswoman in that district.
She'll be the first. She's 32 years old too, so that'll also make her the youngest African American woman in Congress. And then we'll go to Illinois' 6th district. You have the first time in decades that a Democrat will hold that. Sean Casten, he's a newcomer in politics. He beat six-term Republican Peter Roskam. And so this district will now be Democrat. That's the first time it hasn't been controlled by a Republican since the 70s. Dan Lipinski, Democrat. He's the projected winner in Illinois' 3rd district. So he'll end up defeating Republican challenger Arthur Jones. You did have Rodney Davis. He's a Republican. He won a fourth term. So he's in Illinois' 13th district, Central Illinois. He beat Democrat Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan. She was a first-time candidate from Springfield. You had Mike Bost, a Republican, beat Democratic prosecutor Brendan Kelly. This is that's in the 12th district where President Trump held a couple rallies, I think, within the past few months. So that was a Democratic stronghold. Until 2016, you go back to the presidential election, that district supported Trump by almost 15 points over Hillary Clinton. Susana Mendoza, of course, defeated Republican Darlene Sanger. Democrat Susana Mendoza, she'll become the comptroller. But again, to our north, let's take a look now. We're looking at still 99% reporting. Democrat challenger Tony Evers with 1,310,141 votes to Scott Walker, Republican incumbent, 1,279,994. So I think this will happen during your show.
Yeah, probably will.
So we'll keep an eye on it.
Will. You're at 99% right now.
Right.
And, these races that go on through the night are always just like nail biters, you know, especially something that close. I mean, that's like really, really close.
Yeah. And like you said, especially for people who are really interested in politics and the leaders that are elected to run the country, this is like the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Now, in Wisconsin, I've heard a lot of people ask, so what'll happen if it's within a percentage point in Wisconsin? It could possibly go into a recount. The loser can request that, and that'll be a historical thing because that hasn't been done there in Wisconsin since 1960. So we'll see.
Wow. All right, tight race. And then nationally, the GOP holds the Senate.
Correct. Yep. Yeah, they retained control of the Senate, and then the Democrats took control of the House.
Yeah. And go ahead.
Yep, go ahead. No.
And so that's a big story right there. The Democrats taking the House back.
Very big story. Yeah. That's going to change everything, really. You're going to have President Trump's legislative agenda is going to be hotly contested now. You're also, I've heard a lot of it's up to the Democrats really what they do with it, but they have a lot of control now to start investigations.
Right.
So we'll see what they do with that. That's kind of up to them.
Yeah.
But they do have that control now.
They've got that now.
And Senate Republicans will retain control to nominations into place, so they'll hold that control.
Right. And then we had some tight races nationally. Of course, Florida. Every election. It's tight in Florida. How many elections has it come down to where you're looking directly at that state?
It always is.
Same thing happened last night. Tight race. And then, of course, one of the big races that, that everybody was talking about was Beto versus Cruz in Texas. Cruz ended up winning. But again, Beto made it tighter than anybody thought it would be, and he's made a big announcement. He's stepped in as a Democrat to watch. There's no question.
Definitely
about.
Yeah, well, he spent a lot of money too, but he came very close to winning that race.
Yeah, he did. It made it really tight. So
there's only 3% margin in that defeat. Cruz won, but only by 3%.
Yeah, so lots of back and forths here. We watch locally, of course. Illinois has historically been pretty strongly Democratic, but not more than last night. The Democrats showed up big time in this state.
They pretty much control the state government in Illinois at this point.
Yeah. Wow. All right. So there it is. Some interesting stuff happening.
I'm always fascinated by like the smaller little stories that come out in the days leading up to and you know, following. So one of the tightest governor's race involved Kemp and Abrams in Georgia. And right now Kemp is leading with Abrams not conceding yet because she thinks it's too busy margin of error. But one of the funny side stories that I saw was Will Ferrell, the comedian actor, actually went door to door campaigning for Stacey Abrams and, you know, went to local colleges and things like that and didn't make a big deal out of it and tried not to do that. But, you know, they're like, well, what's the best way I can do this? And they're like, go to door to door with us. And, you know, obviously they're, you know, there's a lot of questions about how celebrity and things impact and, you know, Oprah was down there and things like that. But that was kind of one of the funny stories because, you know, you're sitting there, you're in your couch watching TV and then the guy from, you know, Ricky Bobby shows up at your door asking you to vote.
The same thing with Oprah. Oprah did door to door too on that, in that campaign. And, it was really funny was, Trevor Noah was talking about that on The Daily Show and he said, man, you know it's big if Oprah shows up at your front door. And what are you going to do if Oprah showed up at my front door? I'd do whatever she wanted me to do. Anything she wanted me to do, I would do it. And he goes, but I'll tell you what, one of the bad side to this, Noah said, was that a lot of people might have just not voted, not have gone voting because they wanted to stay home in case Oprah shows up at their house. So, you know, because they were like, I'm not leaving the house. Oprah might knock on the door. But yeah, I saw some of that footage of and you know, celebrities obviously come out a lot during these, you know, during these important elections and stuff. And whether or not you care about whether celebrities endorse things, we're going to talk about celebrity endorsements later, but not political ones, just but commercial ones. But you know, whether you care or not, or whether it's important or impactful, it is funny to see Will Ferrell knocking on somebody's door. You know, and then like the woman's, because the footage that I saw was a woman opened up the door and there's Oprah and she almost passed out. Like the woman literally almost passed out because there's Oprah standing at her door with the candidate doing door-to-door stuff. The woman almost passed out. You know, if Oprah shows up at your door and you're a fan of Oprah and you love Oprah and you don't vote for her candidate, oh man, that's not good. You're going to be cursed for the rest of your life. So anyway, well, those are some of the results. An exciting election night for the midterms, and we're keeping an eye. Vic is here, obviously, in the newsroom, keeping an eye on everything that's happening in some of the races that are still going on, especially up above us in Wisconsin. We'll keep you up to date on what's happening there. But that's election night on its whole, and we'll take a break. When we come back, we got the news, and then after the news, Kevin Powell is going to talk with us about there might be a sports story or two to talk about. We'll do that after this.
Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be a lovely day.
Everybody, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Wildcard Wednesday. You're here, Wildcard Wednesday. Get your Wildcard Wednesday requests in. That's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for your Wildcard Wednesday requests. We're going to talk about political movies, the best political movies in honor of yesterday being Election Day. So we'll talk about politics in movies and also some celebrity endorsements from the past and present. Right now, though, as you hear Bill Withers, that means only one thing. It means that we're going to be talking to Kevin Powell. Kevin Powell does sports for us here at WGN on the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantes weekday afternoons. You can follow him on Twitter at KPowell720, at KPowell720. Lots of stuff to talk about sports-wise here. Big stuff happening, and let's bring Kevin Powell in. Kevin, welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, maybe not so much of a lovely day for some Blackhawks fans.
I was just going to say, Kevin, which story should we lead with? Jeez.
yeah, seriously, there's a lot going on right now. But man, about 8 o'clock yesterday morning, and I get the media relations note that Joe Quenneville has been relieved of his duties as the 37th head coach of the Chicago Blackhawks, 452 wins later and 3 Stanley Cup titles later. And that's it for the era of Joe Quenneville is over. So I think Blackhawks Nation all day was just sort of kind of stunned, Nick. I think were.
As you know, I kind of like the Blackhawks, Kevin. Kind of a fan.
Yeah, I've heard.
I was absolutely stunned. I was sitting on my couch. I was just watching, because I usually like when I get home from work, I usually watch like some of the late night shows from the night before.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching Colbert from the night before, and I was having a wonderful time because Colbert sent that he actually borrowed Triumph, the insult comic dog, he borrowed him from Conan and sent him to rallies for Beto and for Cruz. And it was genius, and I was laughing my ass off, and my phone started to buzz a little bit, and I looked, and I saw, it's like you, I got the note, and I went, are you kidding me?
Let me ask you, because you're a diehard Blackhawks fan. You're one of the biggest Hawks fans I know. Is it anger? Is it confusion? What do you feel as a Blackhawks fan?
It's a combination of anger and confusion. I realize that okay, look, here's the deal. I know 2 years ago they got swept by Nashville, and they had a less than stellar season last year. It was a very disappointing season for the Hawks. They didn't make it to the postseason, and they've been on a slump lately, and so I can understand that there needed to be a change made, and I knew that was coming. There was no question about it, because there needed to be a change. There's no question, because it's been a very disappointing Hawks time period from that sweep, from that Nashville sweep, and so I knew something was going to happen. I just don't think they should have got rid of Quenneville.
Let me ask you this question, though. I was reporting on it with Roe all afternoon. I've been thinking about it. How do I feel about it? Let's put it this way. Okay. Would you have rather the Blackhawks, let's just say the season turns out the same way it did last year, and then you get rid of Quenneville?
Mm-hmm.
Or you go the dramatic route and bring in somebody new in a Hail Mary effort, hoping that it somehow injects some new life into the season.
Well, that's the route they went. Clearly, I would have stuck with Quenneville. That's just me. I would have stuck with Quenneville.
Yeah.
I think that Quenneville it doesn't have as much to work with as he once used to, and like Taves and Kane aren't as young as they used to be, and the younger guys that are coming in are not on that same level, and I realize that he messes around a lot with the lines, and people get aggravated with that. He doesn't stick with some of the lines and stuff, but I just don't think he has as much to work with as he did in the heyday, and I don't know if getting rid of him is going to change that. I don't think that Colleton is going to be able to come in and work magic with what he's got to work with, and you know.
Right. Yeah, I think thinking about this from my vantage, initially stunned. I understand the anger for a lot of Blackhawks fans when your coach, who, like I said, won over 450 games for you.
Yep.
He won 76 playoff games.
I know. It's
and of course, I'm stunned there. I'm just sort of trying to make sense of the whole thing. I think that, I think when the dust settles a little bit, but look, we were talking about this with Ron. It was like, normally in most cases when a manager in town or a coach in town gets let go, it's normally a sigh of relief because it probably means it's a fresh chapter, right? Like, finally, we're moving on from this. We've been bad for so long.
Yeah.
The Bears move on from John Fox. It's a positive feeling among Bears fans. Joe Quenneville is one of the most beloved coaches ever in this town.
Absolutely.
I mean, right up there, top two or three. So to all of a sudden wake up to get this news, it was stunning. I think what the Blackhawks realize is that, okay, I think, look, they took a Hail Mary and they make a drastic move in hopes that what happened last year would not happen again. That's really the only thing that's the only way I can make sense of this, or at least try to help Blackhawks fans cope with it a little bit.
I know, man.
Is that at least the Hawks were being proactive, and I know it sounds crazy to say that moving on from Joe Quenneville is being proactive, but it's something. And yes, I realize it's a small sample size this season, but we did see what happened last year. So am I a fan of the move? I've sort of been back and forth on it. Look, I love Q. He's been a class act. He's been a joy to work with. I mean, we work so closely with the Blackhawks.
Yeah.
And that's not even a bias. I'm just saying we've all got to know him a little bit. He's been a class act. He's treated everybody well. He has embraced the fan base. But we cannot sit here for another 50, 60 games and watch them play like they did last year. So it's a weird sort of unfortunate moment in Blackhawks history, but we'll see. I mean, Jeremy Colleton is a guy that is highly thought of in the hockey world, despite being just 33.
Yeah, he's only 33. I know, and again, him being announced as the replacement, I was like, well, you know, there could have been, you know, you couldn't got guys with more experience in the NHL.
But I almost like this more. Like, if you just brought in some veteran coach to take Q's spot, it would have been like, well, what is that? Doesn't even like this. Seems like if you're going to go all in on a Hail Mary, go all in on a Hail Mary.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like bring in this kid. I shouldn't call him a kid. He's still older than me, but he's a kid. He's a kid in the hockey sense of the NHL coaching world. You know, I mean, four of the players on the team are older than him. He played with Brent Seabrook. So, you know, I think if you're going to go all in on this, if you're going to move on from a future Hall of Fame coach, go all in on it, on a guy who maybe has some advanced thinking or different sort of thinking than some coaches around hockey.
I got to say, you know, in reading, a lot of the articles that have been, you know, written about this all day long yesterday, the quotes from Taves and Kane, I think, were the most heartbreaking. Taves said, it's a definite shock. Mm-hmm. I didn't think there was going to be a change for a while. And the most heartbreaking is Kane, who said that, I wish I wasn't sick during the game in Vancouver. I wish I felt as good on the road trip. I could have played better. You know, I mean, it's just that you know, suddenly Kane is like, oh man, I was sick. I feel terrible now. And that was like that's the most heartbreaking quote, you know, that I've heard, you know, about this whole thing. So I don't know.
I remember last year, I think it was ESPN came out, you know, ESPN does these player polls where they're, you know, they don't reveal who voted what, but I believe it was ESPN, and it was which NHL coach would you most like to play for? And they did a survey among all the NHL players, and it was Joe Quenneville.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys grew up for the last decade with Joe Quenneville being their leader, and boom, just like that, he's gone.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad. But I mean, obviously Quenneville's going to land on his feet. I mean, that's not a question. You know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, he'll get hired someplace else. There's no question about it, and he'll continue.
No question.
And he'll continue to be a fantastic, amazing NHL coach, and I'm sure that he'll go on to win more accolades
if he decides to keep coaching.
That's true. But anyway, he's going to land on his feet. It's just that, when I heard about this, I also find it, and I don't know, you know, I don't want to get all conspiracy here, but I also found it really interesting, the timing, on what day the Blackhawks announced that they fired Joe Quenneville.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people kind of brought that up. It's just like, that's, I think that added to the shock of all. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the good news is, if there is good news here, this does not tarnish his legacy even a little bit.
Right.
He goes down as one of the greatest coaches in NHL history and one of the greatest Chicago sports icons ever.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they play tomorrow. So, but you know what? The season continues, man. We're still early into the season.
Yeah.
And I'm still rooting for them, and I'm still going to watch my Hawks. It was just a real, that was a real, kick in the nether regions this morning. So
yeah, it was. It was an eye opener.
It certainly was. Well, that's a heck of a way to wake up. So, really quickly now, let's talk a little. Man, the Bulls are they're 3-8, but the thing about the Bulls is that it's the injuries, correct?
Well, it's a rebuild mixed in with a bunch of injuries to key guys that are part of the rebuild. I mean, Lauri Markkanen is the stud of the team, probably your best player. Although Zach LaVine's actually been the one bright spot so far for the Bulls. He's scored just 41 in that overtime win over the Knicks, a career high. So he's been a bright spot, but Markkanen's out, Chris Dunn's out, and Denzel Valentine's out. So the fact that you're in a rebuild, and then the guys that are major key pieces to the long-term rebuild are out, you're not going to be very good. So that's the current state of the Bulls, but I just want to see what they look like when everybody gets healthy, because right now it is an ugly product right now, Nick.
Yeah. And I have many Bulls fans on my social media news feeds, and it's just every time I look at one of the posts, they're not happy. People are just not happy.
Yeah. It's, I mean, look, when you tear down a team and then hope that some of these key guys can develop and play well and maybe get a win here or there and get some individual growth, then you're okay with it. But when your key guys are on the bench and you're getting smoked by a bunch of teams, it's not fun to watch. So, look, I mean, you can't completely overreact to these slow start because of those injuries. But let's just look forward to when these guys are healthy. Markkanen should be back in a few weeks. Same goes for Dunn and Valentine. So I just want to see what they look like when everybody's healthy. Then it's a whole different ballgame, because then you can actually take some things that are noteworthy of these individual players and of the rebuild. So right now, just a bunch of bad injuries for the Bulls.
All right. Hang on, Kevin. All right, buddy?
You got it.
All right. Kevin Powell is with us. We talk sports with him, usually every few weeks. And we actually here's the thing. I want everybody to know that Dan had Kevin booked before the Quenneville story broke. I just want you to know that we didn't. It's funny because I sent Dan a text with a link to the Quenneville story, Dan, and I said, well, it looks like we'll have something to talk about with Kevin tonight.
And I said to Kevin, as a former producer, you know, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good.
Well, anyway, we got more sports stuff to talk about right after we take a break here on 720 WGN. Yeah. That's right. We're back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we are here until 5 a.m. It's Wednesday, Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday! And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right, you heard that. Time to bear down. Kevin Powell is with us. He does sports afternoons for us on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantes. You can follow him on Twitter at kpowell720. And let's get back to it. Hey, Kevin, the Bears, first place Chicago Bears. Let's talk a little bit about this has been kind of a fun season so far.
Yeah, first time they've had sole possession of first place through week 9 since 2012. So they're in the driver's seat here in what we thought was going to be a very competitive division. I think there are some good teams here. The Vikings, Detroit, and Green Bay have all had some bad losses, as have the Bears. But it's very tight, and we've got a streak here of 3 straight division matchups for the Bears.
Right.
And all 3 are coming within an 12-day stretch. So this is really could kind of define the season and where the Bears go, because you got Lions, then Vikings in primetime, and then Lions again in primetime if you want to consider 11 o'clock on Thanksgiving, where the whole, everybody's watching.
Everybody's going to watch that game, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. You got 3 huge games coming up here, and they're big for sure.
Yeah. Well, did you expect them to have this kind of run? I mean, there are a couple of disappointing games. We want to talk about the Green Bay game, but there's a couple of disappointing games in there. But there was a blowout last week.
I mean, there's always blind optimism with Bears fans, in training camp and things like that. But I'm actually not that surprised. I mean, if you look at the talent, especially on the defensive side of the ball, they're doing what they should do. And they had a couple down weeks, if you want to call them that, definitely in Miami. But the Khalil Mack injury hasn't helped. For the most part, the Bears are kind of what I thought they were going to be.
Okay, Denny Green.
I know, right? That's just stuck in my head, and it just comes out every now and again. I can't help it, Nick.
No, it's all right, man.
It just pops out in everyday life. That just pops out. They are who I thought they were going to be. But seriously, they are like a really good defense, and then a quarterback who has looked pretty good at times, but he's also had some inaccurate throws. Bears offense is averaging, or the Bears in general, averaging over 34 points per game over the past 5 games. That's top 5 in the NFL.
Yeah.
So they're scoring points, 14 of them coming on the defensive side of the ball last week. But They're doing enough on offense, and the defense is playing well, and the Bears are looking pretty good right now. But like I said, these next 3 weeks and the health of Khalil Mack weighs heavily on where this team goes over the next 6-7 weeks here.
Yeah, the next 3 weeks are really big. They're huge for the for the Bears. I know everybody's going to be watching. So, speaking of football, let's go over to Northwestern, having a great year. You know, they lost to Notre Dame this past weekend. You were at the game, correct?
Yeah, what an atmosphere. We were doing a show from there leading up to it because there was just such that buzz with Notre Dame in town. I mean, that was the first time since 1976 Notre Dame had played at Ryan Field.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they've played it a good amount of times, but the previous two times they played, which were considered, I guess, Northwestern home games, were at Soldier. They weren't at Ryan Field.
Yeah.
So 1976 was the last time they were there. Man, it was just an awesome atmosphere because, look, I mean, Notre Dame's South Bend, but it's 110, 120 miles that separates the two schools. Chicago means so much to both of those universities for a lot of different reasons.
Right,
so,
right.
Northwestern was buzzing. Northwestern, if they take care of business the next few weeks and win two or three, they're in the Big Ten championship game.
Yeah.
So that's been sort of a fun year. They had a little rough start there to go, but they reeled together four wins over their last 5 weeks. So they're in pretty good shape.
Yeah. And Dave Ennett seems happy. That's all that matters.
Say that again.
I said Dave Ennett seems happy, so that's all that matters.
That's all that ever matters is if Dave is happy. So, you know, they didn't get the win against Notre Dame, but they fought hard, and that's a top. Look, Notre Dame's number three in the country. So, Northwestern put up a fight at home, and like I said, they take care of business over the final few weeks. They're playing in the Big Ten championship game, and I think you can call that a successful year.
Absolutely. All right, let's talk, before we get out of here, let's talk baseball real quick. Cubs picked up the option for Hamels, Strope, and Quintana. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, the Quintana one's a no-brainer. They're going to pick this one up and the next one because they are so team-friendly. That was a big reason the Cubs wanted to trade for Quintana because he makes so much sense contractually. Cole Hamels, there was maybe some questions that maybe they would try to buy him out and then restructure the deal, maybe even add a second year onto the deal, but that makes sense. Honestly, all three deals made sense for the Cubs.
Yep.
Strope's been good for them for so long out of the bullpen. Hamels was great last year after they traded for him. And Quintana, you're not going to get rid of Quintana after what you traded for him. So all three made sense.
Yeah. Rizzo gets the gold glove. How about that? That's deserved.
He's just solid and consistent. You just can rely on him over there. So I think well-deserved for Rizzo, two straight now.
Yeah, and then Baez is among the finalists for MVP.
Yeah, what a year for Baez. He's not going to win. It's probably going to be Christian Yelich from Milwaukee. Sorry, that's salt in the wound.
It's true. Absolutely true. No question about it.
Yeah, but both great years for both guys, really.
And I'm really tired of the New England area winning as many championships as they do now. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think it was 11 championships now in the last 14 years, something like that. Come on.
It's killing
me.
You know, I mean, I know Boston Red Sox fans, they suffered second only to us. Cubs fans.
Right.
So, and I understand
right.
that. But
I know Boston suffered for a long time, but man, they should just leave those barriers and those like street guards up that line the parade route for all these teams because you probably save the city some money.
It's true.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's they're having a run over there, man.
They are. All right, Kevin. Well, listen, man, always fun to talk to you on my show, and I appreciate you taking the time to do it. You can hear Kevin Powell doing sports on afternoons on the Rocon Show with Anna DeVlantes, and you can follow him on Twitter at kpowell720. And check out the podcast at WGNradio.com. Kevin, thanks, buddy.
Hey, can't thank you enough. Appreciate it, Nick.
Take care. See you later. There you go. Kevin Powell, everybody. And again, listen to him on the Rocon Show with Anna DeVlantes doing sports every weekday. All right, we're going to take a break here for the news on 720 WGN. I was just remembering, I got to get home in time to watch Friends tonight. And I wonder what President Clinton is going to say. Sorry, I found myself in a completely different time period just hearing 30 seconds of that song. Oh, man. Hey, by the way, I'm Nick DiGilio, and I'm your host this morning till 5 a.m. We're in the live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. That just brought me right back to, like, 1995, man, 1996. Good Lord, that is so 90s. That is like the definition of 90s. RJ all day with the presidents of the United States with Lump. Didn't they have Peaches?
Yes, that was their other
That was like
hit.
Their other big hit. I remember I had that album, man. They were popular for 10 minutes.
They were.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that is so distinctively 90s. I mean, it's just takes you right back. Right back. I like Scott Service on the Cubs. He's great. All right. Hi, it's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And so, Vic, it's obviously he's not conceding.
So Governor Scott Walker.
Scott Walker's not conceding.
No, he's not going to concede. It's definitely going to, it's unofficial at this point, but going to request a recount. Recount. Yeah. That's what his lieutenant governor has put out. That's the message. And then he put out a statement a little while ago. The word recount didn't come up, but he did say that he's not going to concede at this point. It's too close, he says.
It'll be interesting.
It is very close.
Yeah, absolutely.
But from the math that I'm looking at, it looks like he was defeated by 0.01117%. And state law says that the loser can request a recount if it's less than a percent. So
that's over 1%.
It is technically over 1%.
Oh, I see.
Very close.
Well, we'll see what happens out there. Keeping an eye on what's going on in Wisconsin, the gubernatorial race up there. That's what you call a tight race. I mean, a lot of tired people at work in Wisconsin tomorrow.
They run on pure adrenaline when these elections come up, though. We're a bunch of nerds about it.
All right. Well, speaking of politics, which we have been a lot this morning and last night, obviously midterms, the elections, big day, big night. Lots of great news stories surrounding it and all kinds of cool stuff. So we thought we would talk political movies, which is always a little fun to do in and around election time. So we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Do you have a favorite political movie, or what movies about politics do you like? And maybe some bad ones that that don't work. And there's been a ton of political movies that have come out over the years. And if you would like to jump in, 312-981-7200. There's one coming out with Hugh Jackman as Gary Hart. The hell's the name of it? It looks terrible, and Eric said it was bad. The Front Runner? Am I right about that?
Yes.
The Front Runner. And that's the, for people who remember, in 88, Gary Hart, you know, in the early time of that election, was considered like a favorite, and then he got busted for having an affair. And then that pretty much just derailed his entire campaign. I think I love Hugh Jackman. I really do. That's just weird casting. If for anybody who remembers that whole time, and I do, I remember it, it was 30 years ago, but it was still, I remember the whole thing, the whole Gary Hart scandal, all of it. I just think Hugh Jackman's a weird choice for it. And then Jason Reitman directed it, and it doesn't look very good. But it does show how times have changed. How, like, you know, that completely this guy was out of the campaign after the scandal broke. But that's one that's coming out, and we've had so many political movies. But we want to talk about that, so we're gonna move away from real politics here and talk about some politics in the movies. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We'd love to hear from you, Dan. Do you have a political movie that stands out for you?
A movie that they actually showed to us in high school was Robert Redford's The Candidate. That was a really interesting peek behind the curtain, because obviously we were still kind of young and learning all about the process and what it's like behind the scenes, and how good things happen to bad people, and corruption, and bad things happen to good people, and things like that. And of course, the final scene, one of the most iconic in movie history, and very appropriate, and exactly how we all felt like having gone through that process with him.
It's a terrific movie. There's no question about it. Michael Ritchie, if I'm not mistaken, directed it. It's Michael Ritchie directed that movie.
Yes, it was.
And Robert Redford, Peter Boyle played his campaign manager. That is a really... The other thing about that movie, Dan, is not only is it like a great little peek behind the curtain, no pun intended, behind the curtain of how you, you know, you work in a campaign, it's also just really entertaining. Like, it's a very entertaining movie.
Very funny.
And really funny and sharp and really smart. And yeah, that last scene, man, that last scene, what do we do now? <It's> like, yeah, I remember seeing that in the theater. I was a kid when it came out. I can't remember what year, 70s. That movie was like, I don't know, 74 maybe?
72.
So I was, you know, like I was a kid when I saw it. Maybe I didn't see it in the theater. I did see it in the theater, but I probably didn't see it in 72 because back in those days they re-released movies in movie theaters. But I can't remember, I can't imagine seeing that movie at the age of 7 and comprehending it. So I must have seen it during a re-release. I know I saw it in the theater, but there's no way me, 7-year-old Nick DiGilio, would understand the movie and get the ending. But I did. I was probably 10, 11 when I saw it. You know, but that's a great one. And we do have a list here from ABC News as they chose their favorite political movies. Vic, do you have a favorite political movie?
You know, for years and years, it was All the President's Men. But I think my favorite movie, which is highly political, is Lincoln Now. I love that movie. I've watched it several times.
That's a really good movie. And Daniel Day-Lewis is good in that.
Wow.
Like, he's Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah.
That just kind of goes without saying that he's, you know, he's Daniel Day-Lewis.
I'm not an expert by far, but as a movie lover or viewer of movies, he's like the epitome of what I would think an actor or actress would aspire to become.
Oh, no, there's no question about it. No, there's no question about it. I mean, one of the greats of all time. And if you know, if it holds true, last year was his last movie. He's retired after Phantom Thread, and he was unbelievable in that movie. Yeah, I was surprised at how much I liked Lincoln. I'm not, you know, I'm not the hugest Spielberg fan, but it's, and did, am I nut, Dan, can you look up, did Tony Kushner write that screenplay? Am I nuts, or why am I thinking that Tony Kushner wrote that screenplay? Somebody,
I think you're right. I gotta double check.
Somebody of great writing talent, and I'm almost positive it was Tony Kushner, the author of Angels in America, wrote the screenplay for Lincoln. And it's a, you know, the thing about that movie, and Vic, you know this, it's a real talky movie, like real talky, but never boring. You know what I mean? Like
not a word is wasted.
Exactly.
You know, that's, yeah, true.
Yeah.
And yes, he did write it.
Tony Kushner wrote it. Yeah, that's a good one. Lincoln's a good one. And the candidate, here's what they say about the candidate. If you want to jump in, we want to hear you. We've been talking real politics, and now we're talking politics and movies. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Here's what they say. Robert Redford stars as a young California lawyer who is talked into running against a well-respected incumbent when grizzled professional political consultants insist that he run on power to the people principles. But as the campaign progresses, party manipulation interferes with his ideals, and real-life politicians George McGovern and Hubert Humphrey appear briefly in cameos. Yeah, that's a really terrific movie if you've not seen The Candidate. You know which one's not listed here by ABC News, Dan? Which is one of my favorite political movies of all time, like way up near the top.
Yep.
Primary Colors.
This list, I think, was actually put out before.
Oh, before
before it was released.
Oh, before Primary Colors.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Because Primary Colors is, I mean, that's one of my favorites of all time, and that was based on the book by Anonymous, and was, you know, essentially about the Clinton campaign, loosely, you know, inspired by the Clinton campaign. Not really loosely. Elaine May wrote the screenplay for it. Mike Nichols directed it. John Travolta, one of the best performances. I think one of the best performances he's ever get. Emma Thompson is beyond good in it. And I just think it's one of the best political movies ever made. And Kathy Bates. Oh, God, Kathy Bates is so good in it. It's a very entertaining movie. It's also heartbreaking, and it's really, really smart. And here's what happened, though, Dan. You've seen Primary Colors, right?
I have, yes.
Vic, have you seen Primary Colors?
It's been a long time.
John Travolta?
Yes.
Yeah.
About Clinton, right? Wasn't it?
Yeah. Based on the book by Anonymous. But it's just such a great movie. And the thing about it, here's what happened. I don't know if you remember, Dan. You remember when that movie came out?
I do not.
It came out during the Lewinsky scandal.
Mm.
And no one went. You know what I mean? Nobody went. And it was just like the timing was bad for that movie.
Interesting.
Because the Lewinsky scandal just broke when Primary Colors came out after the whole thing started. And I think people wanted to get away from it. They didn't want to see it in the movie theaters, you know, because it was everywhere, obviously, you know. I mean, a scandal of that proportion is obviously going to be all over the news and everywhere, you know, in the world of pop culture and all that stuff. Anybody who lived through it, and we all lived through it, remembers how big and how crazy and how huge a story it was and the twists and turns that it took. And I don't think people wanted to be reminded of that, you know, because of the infidelity rumors that happened during the campaign of Bill Clinton and you know, Jennifer Flowers and all of that stuff. And I don't think people, because it's touched upon in the movie, although fictionalized in Primary Colors, because he doesn't actually play Clinton. But I think people were like, no, I don't want to see it. And it got great reviews. It got like 4 stars from everybody. And it is now, you know, some 20 years later, the movie came out in 98. Some 20 years later, it is considered pretty much, you know, a classic. And I personally think it's one of the best political movies ever made. But it just, the timing of the release of that movie was really bad. But if you guys get a chance out there to stream it or to rent it or whatever, it's a really great film, a really, really great film that holds up. And I think one of the strongest movies ever made about politics. So that's what we're talking about. Politics and movies. 312-981-7200. It seems appropriate, Dan, that our first Wildcard Wednesday was by the band The Presidents of the United States.
Yeah, I think you'll see a theme with a couple of our requests.
There we go. I love it when our listeners, create a theme who are actually listening to the show and want to help the show. I think that's awesome. All right, we'll break here, and then Wildcard Wednesday will continue, and we're talking about politics in movies and political movies. 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 a.m. It's Wednesday morning, Wildcard Wednesday. You be Wildcard Wednesday! Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200. Any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. 815 area code requesting Neil Diamond, Coming to America. They come to America. Yeah, man. yes. Coming up a little bit later on, we are going to be talking about celebrity commercial endorsements. Got a whole bunch of those to chat about, and we are now currently talking about political movies and movies about politics. 312-981-7200. We'd love to hear from you. What are your favorites? The best or the worst? Talk or text. 312-981-7200. We just followed up election night coverage here. Getting political in terms of movies. So there you go. I wanted to mention Steven Spielberg's movie from last year. Another Spielberg movie. We just talked to Vic, just mentioned how much he enjoyed Lincoln, which is a really terrific movie and falls under the guise of obviously a political movie. But last year's movie that Spielberg made called The Post, which is a really, if you've not seen it, it's a really, really terrific movie. It stars Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep. It's got an incredible cast of ridiculous actors, and it was about the first female publisher of an American newspaper, the Washington Post, and Ben Bradley, who's played by Tom Hanks. They get a whole bunch of papers that show a cover up by the government about what's going on in Vietnam and more, and they decide that they're gonna post these pages, and it's about the Nixon administration attempting to stop the free press. And it's a really compelling movie and a really entertaining movie, well acted. And I think it's great. I think The Post is a really great political movie and a movie that is also considering, you know, what's going on with the current administration and the free press, a timely one and just as timely now as it was when it really happened back in the 70s. But yeah, The Post is a terrific film, and so I highly recommend that one. Of course, we have some classics here. The Manchurian Candidate is a classic, and also listed here in the ABC News a classic political movie of the film noir genre. A brainwashed U.S. soldier unwittingly turns into a presidential assassin. The movie hits on explosive Cold War era topics, espionage, McCarthyism, conspiracy. When John F. Kennedy is assassinated after the movie's release, Frank Sinatra pulled it from theaters and successfully kept it under wraps for more than 20 years till it resurfaced. Which was really an interesting thing, Dan, because Sinatra was really close to JFK. And so when he was assassinated, obviously Sinatra's in the movie and he's got a lot of pull, and I think he was an executive producer on it as well. He got it pulled from the theaters, and it stayed out of the theaters until the 80s. Like, it didn't come back. I remember when it got re-released, that it showed at the Fine Arts Theater, and they had a big screening of it, and it was a big deal. It was a movie that had not seen the light of day in all those years, and finally it was released. It's a great movie. And then, of course, Jonathan Demme remade it with Denzel Washington, Meryl Streep. And the remake's not bad. It's not great, but it's not bad. It's worth a look. So, but the original Manchurian Candidate is a fantastic movie. Just all the way around, great, great, great film. Let's see. Here is David on WGN. Hi, David.
Yeah, my favorite movie is Dave.
Yeah, with Kevin Klein.
Where President is unconscious, and he got an actor and play the part of the president.
Yep.
I think they ought to remake that with Ben Affleck.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that, but but it's a very entertaining movie. If I'm not mistaken, Ivan Reitman directed that one. It starred Kevin Klein, and it was a really, really fun movie as well. And it says a lot too. It's a kind of a lighthearted movie about a guy who looks exactly like the president taking the place of the president. So it's kind of a lighthearted movie and has kind of a silly plot, but it really becomes about something. It's also listed here. It says White House aides replace a comatose president with a stand-in, an ordinary guy who bears an uncanny resemblance to the real commander in chief. But no one counts on the replacement becoming more popular to the public and the first lady than the actual president did. Is the female lead in that? Is it Sigourney
Weaver?
Sigourney Weaver. That was a good movie, man. That was an entertaining movie. Okay. Thank you, David, for your call. We would love
and Ving Rhames with hair.
Oh, that's right. Ving Rhames has hair. That's a little off-putting. That's a little weird. That's like when I first saw Urlacher. Because I didn't know Urlacher went bald. I just thought he was always, had shaved his head. Then when he came back and he had the hair and he's like, look, I have hair. I was like, that's weird, man. It's just weird. And he got inducted, though. He's bald on his plaque, right?
Bust, yeah.
His bust. A bust. Plaque. I'm thinking of Baseball Hall of Fame.
It's all right.
All right. All right, let's take a break here. Political movies, 312-981-7200 for talk and text, and the news is coming up. That's a deep cut right there, man. It's Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. It's any artist, any song, anything. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. Request lines are open at 312-981-7200. Irwin has chosen Joe Walsh's Vote for Me. So, and the theme continues.
That may be our last one, depending on the next couple requests. But bravo, everybody.
Okay, good. Nice job. Maybe we'll get a few more politically themed requests for Wildcard Wednesday. 312-981-7200. We've got texts coming in, and we would love to hear from you. Call or text us now with your favorite political movies. 312-981-7200. Steve says, my favorite would be a double feature of Failsafe followed by Dr. Strangelove. Yeah, Failsafe is the real, like, serious version of the same kind of story, whereas Dr. Strangelove is the black comedy farce. And I like Failsafe, but Dr. Strangelove is one of my favorite movies of all time. It is truly one of my favorite movies of all time. You know, it's funny, Dan, is that I don't know if you remember this or not, or maybe if I've told you this or not. Do you know who has a Thanksgiving tradition of watching Dr. Strangelove? The entire family watches it every Thanksgiving.
Who's that?
Gary Lee Wright.
Ah.
He and his family would watch it. And I don't know why they chose Thanksgiving. I'm not sure why they chose Thanksgiving. But a Thanksgiving tradition at the Gary Lee Wright household was to watch the great Stanley Kubrick black comedy, Dr. Strangelove. And, you know, everybody talks about how great Peter Sellers is in the movie. He plays three roles in the movie. He is great. He's phenomenal. But the funniest performance in that movie, for my money, is George C. Scott. George C. Scott is hilarious in Dr. Strangelove, to the point where, like, if you look back at George C. Scott's career now, you don't, you know, when you think George C. Scott, you don't think comedies. You think, you know, like Patton and you know, very serious dramas and very powerhouse, you know, strong performances. But, you know, if back in that day, if you would have saw, if you would have seen, I'm surprised that George C. Scott didn't just do nothing but comedies after Dr. Strangelove. Because he's hilarious in Dr. Strangelove. I mean, it's one of my favorite comedic performances of all time. Tanted, you've seen Dr. Strangelove, right?
I have, yes.
He is unbelievably funny in it.
Yeah.
Like, ridiculous. 608 category, calls in with, or texts us in with Wag the Dog. I'm not as big a fan of that movie as everybody else is. Barry Levinson directed Mammon, it wrote it. Incredible cast, De Niro, Hoffman. I mean, I like it. I just don't love it. Lots of people just have put that like near the top of political satire, and I like it, but I don't love it. 773 area code says I love Broadcast News, which is a semi-political movie. Yeah, I mean, Broadcast News is more, you know, romantic comedy / behind the scenes broadcast movie, but it's a great movie. I mean, anytime you can mention Broadcast News, it's fine. I don't care. I adore that movie. I really, really love that movie. I heard at the end of Patty's show, she mentioned, speaking of Albert Brooks, she mentioned Defending Your Life because she was talking about that the TV show The Good Place. By the way, if you've not seen Dan, you haven't seen The Good Place, have you?
No, I haven't had a chance.
Maybe we'll talk about it tomorrow because Dan Feinberg's going to be on, and we both adore that show. And give it as much plugs as we possibly can. Anytime Feinberg's on, not many people are watching A Good Place. It's got a small but very passionate following, and of which I am one. But Albert Brooks is in Broadcast News. He was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for that movie, and he's phenomenal in it. As is everybody. Holly Hunter, William Hurt, everybody. Robert Prosky. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. But yeah, it is interesting that Patty mentioned Defending Your Life, because that is, you know, Albert Brooks, in my opinion, is one of the greatest comedic filmmakers of all time. A great writer, really brilliantly funny, a great stand-up, and also an incredible director who has directed some of the best American comedies of all time, like classic American comedies. He's made 4 certified masterpieces, as far as I'm concerned, which would be Real Life, his first movie, Modern Romance, Lost in America, which is one of the greatest films ever made in any genre, and Defending Your Life. Those 4, he's made more than 4 movies, but those 4, and I think Looking for Comedy in the Muslim World is as good a movie as Albert Brooks has ever made. He's only made 2 other movies. He made Mother, which was funny, not great, and The Muse, which was good, but meh. But I think he had a comeback with Looking for Comedy in the Muslim World. He had made kind of 2 disappointing movies. Mother is good and worth seeing. They're all worth seeing. But he went back to like the days of Defending Your Life and Lost in America when he made Looking for Comedy in the Muslim World, which is also a political movie. Let's see. 708 area code says The Contender, which came out in the year 2000. Yeah, that's a, you know, any movie, let me just put it to you this way. Any movie where Jeff Bridges plays the President of the United States is fine with me. And that's what happens here. And that's a really good film. Joan Allen was in that one. It's a very, very good movie. And she's great in it. And I believe Bridges got nominated for supporting actor for that, if I'm not mistaken. 815 area code, An American President is a fun political movie. That is a lovely film, An American President. I think that I really, really love that movie. Aaron Sorkin wrote that one. Rob Reiner directed it. Michael Douglas and a luminous Annette Bening. She's so lovely in that movie. You know, but that's a really, really, really great movie. Richard Dreyfuss and then Martin Sheen played the what did he play? He played his
chief of staff.
He played the president's chief of staff. Then he'd go on to be the president in Aaron Sorkin's next attempt at showing the White House with The West Wing. Yeah, no, that's a good. If you've not seen An American President, that's like that's a really terrific movie. A really, really, really terrific movie. LJ says Power with Richard Gere. Man, I haven't seen that movie in a long time. If I'm not mistaken, Sidney Lumet directed that one. I don't remember much about it. I remember thinking it was pretty good. I think he plays a political strategist, I think, in that movie, or a consultant of some kind. Gere? Richard Gere? Yeah, I just haven't seen it in a really long... I mean, I've seen it. I just
successful political consultant. And yeah. Yes, Lumet was the director.
Lumet was the director of that one. Canadian Bill picks Canadian bacon. You know, have you ever seen Canadian Bacon, Dan?
I have not.
It's a funny movie. You know who directed it?
I do not.
Michael Moore.
Hmm.
And it's not a documentary. It's the only movie he's ever made. It's not a documentary. It's just a flat-out sort of like narrative, you know, fictional farce. It's actually pretty funny. I mean, it got trashed when it came out. You know, it was like, Michael Moore, stick to what you know. Make your little snarky documentaries. You don't know how to make a narrative movie. I actually think it's pretty funny. And I'm not a Michael Moore fan by any stretch of the imagination, but that one actually is a movie that I like more than most of his movies, more than most of his documentaries. A few here that got mentioned before: Wag the Dog. By amazing coincidence, this movie about a president manufacturing a war to cover up a scandal was released just around released as the world was meeting Monica Lewinsky and the United States was going to war in real life, as an airstrike on Iraq, prompting Senator Trent Lott to say. Clinton ordered this an airstrike. Both the timing and the policy are subject to question. So there you go. So that's when Wag the Dog came out. And that movie did pretty well. The American president, they say, against the advice of his aides, a widower president decides to start dating in the middle of an election year. The object of his affection just happens to be lobbying for legislation he doesn't want. Witty dialogue, good-looking scenes at the White House. Yes, that is a really lovely movie. All right, how about Charlie Wilson's War? Dan, have you seen Charlie Wilson's War?
Yeah, excellent movie.
Yeah, it is really good. And I can't say enough. And there's another one. Sorkin wrote that too,
mm-hmm.
And Mike Nichols directed that. Sorkin and Mike Nichols, who have been mentioned now a bunch of times.
Yep, definitely their bread and butter.
Yeah. I can't say enough about Philip Seymour Hoffman's performance in that movie, but particularly his first scene. Do you know, you remember his first scene?
Yep, the monologue.
It's one of the greatest first scenes of any character. He's screaming at John Slattery and busting windows and stuff, and he's so good in that movie. And like the moment he comes on, that first scene that Philip Seymour Hoffman has in Charlie Wilson's War, that's one of those moments where it's like, well, this is the best first scene I've ever seen. This is the best character introduction. One of the best character introductions I've ever seen. And I mean, it's Philip Seymour Hoffman too. And you know that the deal there is that you don't go wrong with Philip Seymour Hoffman ever. My only issue with that movie was I thought Julia Roberts was miscast. I thought she was a little, you know, and I don't necessarily dislike Julia Roberts, but she kind of seemed out of her element. Like everybody else was there, like Hanks was great, and everybody else was really great, and Philip Seymour Hoffman, please, but she just seemed a little. She just seemed a couple steps behind. I remember,
Another sign of a good movie always is kind of just like when they cast people in minor roles who you eventually become big stars, because Amy Adams plays as one of his assistants, Emily Blunt plays a certain role that comes into play later, and
yep.
A bunch of John Slattery, you know, there's, you know, even the people who don't have big parts,
yep,
are very quality actors. Yep. So that's always kind of an interesting wrinkle to, you know, a good movie.
The thing is, you know what it is, Dan, any actor would want to work with Mike Nichols. That, you know what I mean?
And right, but like these were before they were stars.
Oh yeah, before they were stars. Yeah. I remember Emily Blunt being like really hot in that movie. That's one of the. And I remember her being good, but I just remember her going, "Whoa."
Yeah.
So, all right, let's take a break here. We're talking about political movies. If you want to jump in, it's the day after election night. And we're continuing some politics, but fictional politics, political movies. What are your favorites? At 312-981-7200. We will continue this conversation and your texts and your calls. And Wildcard Wednesday continues, too. 312-981-7200. We'll do it after this break. This is another song called Vote for Me. But this is clearly a different song than the Joe Walsh song. Wildcard Wednesday continues. Hear me, Wildcard Wednesday. That's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. That's Chicago. 773 area code requesting that one. All right. Hey, we are talking political movies on this, the day after Election Day. Politics, and we're talking about politics and movies. Which ones are your favorites? 312-981-7200. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. Coming up at 6, Steve Cochran with the morning drive. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right, what are some of your favorite political movies? Let's see. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Alec on WGN. Hi, Alec.
Yeah, did you see The Darkest Hour?
Yes, I saw The Darkest Hour, yes, with Gary Oldman.
Yeah. I've been watching it over and over again.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't as big a fan of the movie itself. I thought Gary Oldman was great. I thought Gary Oldman was really, really great. I didn't think the movie was that great. But I thought he was great. But no, that certainly fits into a more recent political movie about the movies about Winston Churchill, and Gary Oldman won the Academy Award for it. In fact, the guy who wrote the screenplay also wrote the screenplay for the terrible new Queen movie, Bohemian Rhapsody. So there's a connection right there. All right, Alec, thanks for the call. Darkest Hour. Let's see. Here is David on WGN. Hi, David.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I just want to go old school with Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Yeah, that's
1939.
That's a classic. An absolute classic. One of the one of the classic movies.
Capricorn. Yes.
Yeah, Capra and Frank Capra with a an incredible performance by Jimmy Stewart. Just one of those movies it's just one of those movies that anytime it's on, you watch it. And whenever it's
right, exactly, yeah.
It is a great movie. It's a great movie with a wonderful message.
And you already mentioned in American President, which is a really great speech at the end of that movie. It's a really great speech at the end of that movie with Michael Douglas. Fantastic.
It's great stuff, yeah. David, thank you, man.
All right.
Yeah, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, actually one of the best political movies of all time. Directed by Frank Capra, ABC News, it writes, the resident film buff Nancy Gabriner says, it's the movie that made us love politics, quote unquote. Classic tale of a naive senator who exposes corruption in Washington. Jimmy Stewart stars as the wide-eyed country boy who was appointed to finish a dead senator's term by powers that assumed that he wouldn't disturb their corrupt schemes. And that is one of those movies that absolutely represents that everything that everybody loved about Frank Capra. I mean, it is the quintessential Frank Capra movie. Although, obviously, It's a Wonderful Life is up there, too. But Mr. Smith Goes to Washington is one of those movies that you watch it and it makes you feel good. It's a rousing movie. It's a movie where you really care about what's happening on screen and what the movie has to say and the main character. It's a terrific movie and an absolute classic, an American classic. All right. More political movies. 312-981-7200. Here's Jeffrey on WGN. Hi, Jeffrey.
Yeah. You hear me, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I know you're a big movie fan, you love your movies, but there's something that nobody talks about. I've never heard about it, but it was a two-parter, I think. It was on The Outer Limits, and it was called something like Night of the Dragon. I was wondering if you recall that one.
No, I do not.
Well, the guy is something like a North Korean, and the American president is liquidated. And they create a formula that it could turn skin into plastic, and they mold the face of the president, and he's assassinated, and a North Korean leader, takes over for our president. And when you see that episodes, it reminds me of what's going on today, and that's why people should see that.
Wow. All right.
It's a couple of episodes of The Outer Limits. It was made in about 1964.
All right, Outer Limits. All right, look for that. Jeffrey says, look for The Outer Limits. for that episode. I have not seen an episode of The Outer Limits in many, many, many years. Jeffrey, thanks. Thanks for the call. 312-981-7200. Yeah, I've not seen an episode of Outer Limits in a long time. Let's see. Marianne says, Advise and Consent. Advise and Consent's a tremendous movie. That's another one. You know, it's been too long since I've seen that one. I would love it. Man, it's been way too long since I've seen Advise and Consent. Dan, have you ever seen Advise and Consent?
I have not.
It's pretty great. It's from the early 60s. And it's got Henry Fonda's in it, Charles Laughton's in it, Walter Pidgeon. Otto Preminger directed it. It's actually a really terrific movie. It's just been a long time since I've seen it. I need to go back and watch that one again. So, let's see. Megan says, I know it's a silly comedy, but I love Kirsten Dunst and Michelle Williams in Dick, about the two teenagers being deep throat and being at the center of Watergate. Obviously, it's complete fiction, but it's super entertaining. Megan, the movie Dick is fantastic. It is a terrific movie that is wildly underrated. And also, you know what else is great about it? Have you ever seen the movie Dick?
No, I have not.
It is really, really. Andrew Fleming directed it, who's one of my favorites, and it's got an unbelievable cast. Dan Hedaya, who played Alicia Silverstone's dad in Clueless. Everybody remembers him from that. He was in Blood Simple. He was one of the Tortellis. He was what's his face, his ex wife on Cheers. Rhea Perlman. That's who Dan Hedaya is. Remember they got the terrible spinoff called the Tortellis?
Right.
But they were very funny when they made an appearance on Cheers. Anyway, that's him. He plays Nixon in the movie, and he's great. And Bruce McCullough from Kids in the Hall and Will Ferrell play Woodward and Bernstein in it. It is a really, really funny movie. And Megan, I'm with you on it. It's obviously not based in any sort of actual reality, except for the real Watergate stuff that was happening at the time. But it's a purely fantasy look at what that could have been. But it is a very entertaining and a really, really, really funny movie. Incredibly underrated. If you've not seen the movie Dick, you should. And Kirsten Dunst and Michelle Williams are both great in it. Great. And this was before Michelle Williams became Michelle Williams, Michelle Williams. This was still oh, it's that girl from Dawson's Creek. You know, at that time, Kirsten Dunst was a much bigger star, you know, a much bigger actress than Michelle Williams. So go back and watch. She's really funny, too, because Michelle Williams is not known as a comedic actress, really. You know, she mostly does pretty heavy dramas and serious stuff. And she's great, but she's hilarious in that movie. It's so funny. It is such a funny movie. Steve says Donald Pleasance was the president in Escape from New York. Yes, he was. And that movie was a futuristic movie. It took place in the very, very far future of 1997. The movie was made in 1981, though, but it takes place in 1997. And it's what's really funny about that. First of all, Escape from New York rules the planet. Let me just say that right now. And they're screening it at the Elk Grove Theater. I think it's only $5 to get in, and it's next Wednesday. It's a week from week. Uh-oh, that snuck up on me. It's a week from Wednesday. Anyway, it's only $5 to get in. They're screening it. But what they do really quickly is he's the president, and at no point does Donald Pleasance ever not have his English accent. And it's like, wait a minute, how is this? This guy must be such a great politician that they changed the rules in America where we're going to, okay, you know what? Let's elect a British guy. All right, the news is coming up next. 773 area code and Peter and Decatur both requested Schoolhouse Rock with I'm Just a Bill. That's right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich follows this show at 5 with the opening bell, and the great Steve Cochran at 6 has your morning drive. And we are following election night and talking about political movies and politics in movies. We're also going to talk a little bit later about some famous commercial celebrity endorsements. That's all coming up. We would love to hear from you for Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday! That's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. Request lines are open at 312-981-7200. And that's the same phone number to call or text your thoughts on your favorite political movies. Let's get back to the conversation. Here's Diane. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Nick.
Hi.
One of my favorites I haven't heard mentioned yet was On the Beach. Sad, but good acting.
Yeah, that one doesn't strike me. The first thing I think of when I think On the Beach is not necessarily political, but it's a great film. It is a terrific movie. But I just, man, I haven't seen that one. That's another one that I haven't seen in a long time. I'm going to have to play catch up on some of these movies. So, but yeah, On the Beach. That's a great film. Thanks, Diane.
You're welcome.
Take care. Yeah, I don't necessarily, that's not the first genre I think of when I think of On the Beach. But yeah. All right. 630 area code sends a text for The Best Man. The Best Man, and this is not the wacky comedy that came out a few years ago with who's in that one? Is this is Steve?
Kevin Hart. I believe.
Kevin Hart is in that one. Yeah, The Best Man. It's not that. This is Gore Vidal wrote this, it's about the Secretary of State and a guy who's running opposed him, and it's Henry Fonda. Cliff Robertson is in it. Lee Tracy plays the president. He won an Academy Award for it, and it came out in 1964. And that's a really good film. And there's another one I haven't seen in a long time. So a couple of texts here. 7 days in May. 301 area code request there says that one. 773 area code. Being There. Yeah, that's another Peter Sellers movie. He plays Chance the Gardener, who rises to political power despite the fact that he's not smart and has never actually all he did was he was a gardener and he lived in a big house and he watched a lot of TV. But then he rises up through, you know, and becomes a powerful politician. Shirley MacLaine was in that. Melvin Douglas, Hal Ashby directed it. Peter Sellers is great in it. 414 area code, The Way We Were with Robert Redford and Barbara Streisand. 773 area code, LBJ. The last one with Woody Harrelson. Ah, all right. All right, here are some other ones. What about Bob Roberts? Did you ever see Bob Roberts, Dan?
I did not.
It's a mockumentary that was written and directed by Tim Robbins, and Tim Robbins plays Bob Roberts. In this mockumentary, chart-topping folk singer Bob Roberts is a right-winger who co-opts 1960s liberal ideals to mount a conservative bid for the Senate. Blowing his harmonica and strumming his guitar, Roberts lashes out at the liberals for ruining the country. It's a satire that is studded with star cameos. You know, I remember when Bob Roberts came out, which is, I think it's a terrific movie. I really am a huge fan of Bob Roberts. It's got a million, like, as they mentioned, a million cameos in it. But I remember when it came out, Tim Robbins, you know, who wrote, he and his partner wrote the music, the songs for it. And people loved the songs. They thought they were funny and, you know, and really satirical. But he refused to release the soundtrack because, one, he didn't want people to think that he agreed politically with the character, the Bob Roberts character. And he didn't want these satirical songs to be used in a non-satirical way. You know, he's on the left, Tim Robbins, and I don't think that's a mystery. But he's very, very far on the left. And he didn't want right wingers to, you know, use the songs like for campaigns or to, you know, to misinterpret them as anything but satire. So he never released the soundtrack. But that's the first movie. You go back and watch that movie. That's from 1992. So it's a long time ago. But, Dan, if you ever see the movie, if you ever go back, if it's on cable or something, look for Jack Black. Because that's the first time I ever noticed Jack Black. And he's got a very, very small role, but a really, really memorable one. And he is hilarious in it. And he's barely got dialogue. But he plays a very, very, let's just say he's a very, he's a very, very passionate supporter of Bob Roberts. Let's just say that. And I think he's only in two scenes. He's in it very briefly. But I remember sitting in the screening room watching it and going, who is that guy? Who is that guy? What was Jack Black's, like, I mean, obviously his big breakthrough was High Fidelity. No question about that. But he had done a bunch of movies before High Fidelity. He's in The Cable Guy, right? Isn't he in The Cable Guy? Like, he plays Matthew Broderick's best friend, I think, in Cable Guy.
Rick, according to IMDb.
Yeah, so he's in that, but he had to be in something. What do they got? What do they got for him as it listed for Jack Black early on? Because Bob Roberts, like I said, was 1992, and Cable Guy was 96. So there's time in between there.
He was in the fantastic roller skating slash skateboard movie Airborne.
He was in Jack Black is in Airborne?
Yes, I do remember seeing that. Now he's like, I mean, he's one of the, like, part of the crew, obviously.
Right.
So,
right.
Let's see here. TV. Apparently, according to this, he's in Waterworld as a pilot.
What? Now, come on. I should know that. I've only seen that movie. It caused a divorce.
I'm kind of surprised you didn't.
Wow. Now that gives me an excuse to go back and watch Waterworld again.
He was in The Jackal.
Yes, I remember him, and that's the remake of Day of the Jackal, called The Jackal, with Bruce Willis.
A film called Bong Water, not surprisingly.
Oh, there's a shock.
Enemy of the State.
Wait a minute. He's in the Will Smith, Gene Hackman movie? He's in that?
Yes, he's got a credit as Felder.
Wow. Oh, wow, okay.
And then High Fidelity.
And then High Fidelity, okay. But Bob Roberts his first? No, Airborne has to be first, right? Before Bob Roberts, because Bob Roberts was
nope. Bob Roberts was first.
That was his first movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he had done two TV movies.
Yeah.
And then Bob Roberts was his first film.
Well, that's something, man. If that's his first movie, and I took notice of him, that's something. Because I was like, who is that guy? But and it was. Yeah, Jack Black in that. I mean, if you go back and watch Bob Roberts, he's so memorable in the scene and a half that he's in. But yeah, so yeah, when Bob Roberts came out, you know, it got sort of mixed reviews. A lot of people thought it was heavy handed and very, very. I mean, you know, like I said, Tim Robbins' politics are not. He doesn't hide them. He's very, very. He's very, very far on the left. And which is why, have you seen Dead Man Walking?
I have not.
Here's the thing about Dead Man Walking. Because Tim Robbins wrote and directed it, obviously. Susan Sarandon and Sean Penn are both phenomenal in it. And I went into that movie, you know, because knowing how political both Susan Sarandon and Tim Robbins are and how outspoken they were, and clearly on the left, I couldn't believe, seriously, a movie about death sentence would be as even-handed as it was, like shockingly even-handed. Like you could see both sides of it. And I was absolutely surprised. I was stunned by that, quite frankly, because I thought it was going to be really heavy-handed and totally one-sided, but it's not at all, which is shocking considering who wrote and directed it and who's in it. And Jack Black's in that movie. Jack Black is in that. He plays Sean Penn's brother in that movie, and obviously it's a serious movie. Haven't seen Dead Man Walking?
No, I didn't.
It's really good, man. All right, let's see. 219 area code says my favorite political movie is The Candidate, which we mentioned, which is mentioned a couple of times. And where did you? Where Dan? You
high school.
Watched, was that was in high school? That was just like. Was another 2 day or 3 day?
It was a 2 or 3 day. It was right around election time.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's cool. What teacher?
Mr. Ryan. It was not. It was pretty funny because Mr. Ryan was very, you know, very stern and did not put up, you know, a lot of stuff. You know, and but he screened us. The Candidate and Tora Tora Tora, which has a little bit of nudity in it. So we were just, all of us were kind of like, what is going on here, man? You know?
So was it, he screened Tora Tora Tora, were you studying World War II?
We were studying, yeah. So, I mean, he taught our civics class, so there's a lot of history interwoven into it. So
yeah. My favorite movie president is Bill Pullman in Independence Day. Come on now.
Oh, like you wouldn't have voted for him after that speech?
Well, look.
Save the universe, Nick.
My problem is that I absolutely hate that movie. I hate Independence Day. And so I don't remember. I just remember hating every frame of that movie. But I mean, I love Bill Pullman. I would vote for him just because he's Bill Pullman. I don't care. I think Bill Pullman rules. 708 area code, Chappaquiddick. Oh, that's a recent one. Recent one from Byron Allen's Entertainment Studios Company. It's Chappaquiddick. 312 area code, All the President's Men, which has been mentioned before, which is a great film. Peter Indicator mentions one of my favorites, Bullworth, with Warren Beatty. That is a great movie. Written, directed by Warren Beatty. Warren Beatty's in it. Holly Berry's in it. It's a really outrageous movie. And some of the stuff that comes out of Warren Beatty's mouth in that movie is just, to this day, you watch it. And we can't believe that movie's 20 years old. Bullworth is 20 years old. It's a great movie. If you've never seen it, it's a challenging one, and it's an outrageous movie, but totally worth watching. Great stuff. Peter Indicator picking Bullworth, which is one of my favorites. All right, let's take a break here. We've got a few more political movies to talk about, and then we are going to jump into the world of celebrity endorsements. 312, not political endorsements, even though we did talk about Will Ferrell going door-to-door in Georgia. But, all right, we'll take a break. More coming up after this on WGN. We're talking political movies here. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here on a Wednesday morning, Wildcard Wednesday. You mean Wildcard Wednesday? 312-981-7200. And we are talking about your favorite and my favorite and our favorite political movies here on the day after Election Day. And analysis and all kinds of stuff will still be happening this morning on Steve Cochran's show and throughout the day, covering what has happened and what is still happening as a result of the midterms from yesterday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. All right, let me get to one of my favorites. Election. This is such a great movie. Alexander Payne wrote and directed it. It is my favorite Reese Witherspoon performance of all time. She plays Tracy Flick, who is an overachiever in high school, who is running for president, class president, and Matthew Broderick plays the government teacher, who it basically battles this unethical high school student played by Reese Witherspoon. It's a brilliantly funny movie, and Chris Klein is hilarious in it. This was the movie when I got, I saw Citizen Ruth, which is essentially the first movie Alexander Payne put out, which I really enjoyed. But this is the one. Election is the one that that really just, for me, established Alexander Payne as a major, major voice and a major talent. And he's continued to do so. And I'm like the only person in the world that liked Downsizing. I know I'm completely alone. His last movie, which came out last Christmas with Matt Damon, shrinking himself down to a tiny, little tiny person. People really hated that. People really hated that movie. And I know Colin and Eric both disliked it. I really liked it. I like everything the guy does. I think Alexander Payne he's one of my favorites. He's one of my favorite filmmakers, one of my favorite writers. He and his partner, Jim Taylor, are both two of my favorite writers. They're, of course, responsible for with Sideways, which is one of my favorite films ever. But here's what they say about Election. ABC News includes the film Election, Alexander Payne's Election, as one of the best political movies. A high school teacher is tormented by the successful politicking of the most popular girl in school during a hard-fought student council election. Stunning acting by Reese Witherspoon in a film that features a brilliantly subtle parody of Ross Perot's role in the 1992 presidential election. You remember Ross Perot, Dan?
Of course.
With his flow charts and stuff. Look at here. Look at this hair right here. He like Pritzker, he spent like $8 billion on his. Didn't he spend like
primarily self-financed.
Whatever happened to that guy? Where's Ross? Is he still alive, Ross Perot?
I think he passed. I'll double check that.
Okay. So do you remember
No, forgive me. He's still with
alive.
Us. 88.
88 years old. Ross Perot! We got to make a change, people! It was like Dana Carvey played him on SNL during that time. And, wait a second. Now, who played? What are you saying? Oh, it was it. No. Was it? Oh, Kucinich, right? It was Kucinich that Amy Poehler played, right?
Yes. Okay. That was Kucinich.
All right. Okay. Because he was also a little guy with ears,
right?
And so
didn't they do a bit once where Dana Carvey was all three?
Yeah. Yeah. He was running for It was crazy. Absolutely crazy. Yeah. Dana Carvey all over the place. But here's a movie that I was surprised by. I was surprised by Nixon. I expected, you know, it's Oliver Stone, and so I expected it to be completely ham-fisted and over the top, and it really wasn't. And I thought the casting of Anthony Thompson, or Anthony Thompson? Who the hell is that? Anthony Hopkins as Richard Nixon was weird. You know, like, I was like, that's just weird. But he's really good in it. Have you seen that movie?
I have not.
It's actually surprisingly, because I went in, I mean, my expectations were very, very low. How about W? Nobody's mentioned that's another Oliver Stone movie with Josh Brolin. And we got a new one coming out, Dan, written and directed by Adam McKay, called Vice, in which Christian Bale plays Dick Cheney. It looks great. I have to say, it looks fantastic. Rumsfeld is played by Steve Carell. George W. Bush is played by Sam Rockwell. And that comes out in December. It looks great. I mean, it does. It looks really, really great. And I love the fact that now that Adam McKay is sort of like this go-to political filmmaker now. I mean, after The Big Short, you know, because he won the Academy Award for his screenplay for The Big Short. But this is the guy who wrote some of the weirdest stuff in the history of SNL. You know, like the weirdest. Think of the weirdest Will Ferrell stuff. Like Bill Brashsky, all that stuff. That's Adam McKay. Adam McKay wrote all that crazy stuff. So he, you know, and of course, you know, like he's responsible for Anchorman and my favorite of all of his movies, which is the Other Guys with Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg. I love the fact that now he's like this critically acclaimed Academy Award winning political filmmaker who's making a movie about Dick Cheney, and it'll probably get nominated for a bunch of Academy Awards. So. I love that. I love the path that Adam McKay has taken to this part of the world right now. So, all right, let's take a break. We got the news coming up next, and then we're going to talk about some celebrity endorsements and more. And then we'll wrap up the political movie talk as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. News is up next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN on a Wednesday morning. Wildcard Wednesday. Wildcard Wednesday. 312-981-7200. Dave in Monroe, Wisconsin, choosing Dionne Warwick. That's what friends are for. We're going to hear a few songs involving love and friendship. Because, you know, that's what follows an election.
Apparently so. There's the secondary theme of today's requests were love and friendship.
Love and friendship. Well, that's nice. That's a nice thought after a hard-fought political battle. So, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We were talking about politics in movies and political movies, and now we're going to talk about celebrity endorsements, not political endorsements, but just like endorsements for products and stuff. And we got a whole bunch of them here. If you're going to jump in, who was your favorite celebrity endorsement, the products that are most memorable in that world of celebrity endorsement? 312-981-7200. First one listed here is Michael Jordan. Now, Michael Jordan, here it says, his Airness Michael Jordan has been partnered with Nike since 1984 when the first Air Jordans rolled off the assembly lines. The shoe now has 33 editions and numerous re-releases and redesigns with different colors. More importantly, Jordan's affiliation with Nike launched his own spin-off brand, Jordan Brand, which until recently was the number two best-selling sneaker company in America. So who is it that has every Air Jordan? Is it Drake? No, it's not Drake.
I wouldn't be surprised if he did. I think he is a Jumpman spokesman. Yeah. So
I just remember like hearing something about this guy has the biggest collection of Air Jordans of anybody, and I think he's somebody from the hip hop community, and I'm leaning towards it being Drake, but I'm not positive. So. Well, you know, I'm looking at this article here about the notable celebrity endorsements. And again, jump in here with your products and your favorite celebrity endorsers, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. No mention of Hanes here. And he still he's still on those Hanes commercials, right?
Yes, he is.
And those are the ones where, like, the commercials that he did were, like, the tagless shirts, right?
Right.
Yeah. Remember when Michael Jordan had that weird mustache?
Yes. He sometimes still grows it.
I don't understand why. I don't understand that. And he's got him in some of those Hanes commercials. Mm-hmm. He's got that stupid mustache. And it's just like, it's totally distracting. It's like, no, you don't. That's just it's not the kind of mustache you want to grow. You know? It doesn't look right. You shouldn't. It brings up bad memories, and I'm not talking about Charlie Chaplin. That's not what pops into my head when I see that mustache. But yeah, no mention of Hanes here, and what else? McDonald's
was McDonald's, Gatorade.
Oh yeah, Gatorade. Well, he's been all over the place. He was an endorser of many products.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, what
Nike,
was
Nike? Obviously, with the famous, you know, Republicans buy shoes too.
Oh yeah. You know, what was it? It was him and Larry Bird, right? When they played horse?
Shoot. Yeah.
When they were playing horse off the ball, off this blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And that was for McDonald's?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you remember the McJordan?
I do remember the McJordan. Did you ever have to serve the McJordan? Was that part of your tenure?
Oh, no. No.
I mean,
McJordan was like the early 90s.
I didn't realize it was the early 90s.
Yeah, it was like right around when they started winning championships.
My favorite Bulls tie-in, though, was the cups that would change colors. Dennis Rodman's hair color when you filled it with cold liquid.
I don't remember that.
You don't?
Was that a McDonald's tie-in?
Yeah, it was during the championship run, and they put out special commemorative cups. And
his hair would change color?
His change would cut out, you know, after you put the liquid in there. And that was, of course, excluding the whole traffic jam he created with the building along the Kennedy.
Oh, that's right.
Right, and they put the top of his head just off the roof so they could change his hair color.
Yeah. I totally forgot about that. That's a WinTrust now, isn't it? What's on that building now?
It's definitely a bank.
We pass it every night. I remember when it caused all the traffic jams. Yeah. Oh boy, 90s Bulls with the worm. Yeah. No, but the McJordan was a damn delicacy, if I remember correctly. I enjoyed the McJordan very much. It was that's right with because didn't somebody have like the leftover McJordan barbecue sauce?
Yeah, they bought like sold for like $33,000 on eBay or something.
So it was basically like a quarter pounder with cheese, barbecue sauce, and I want to say, was it like grilled onions maybe or sauteed onions? I just remember, you know what the difference was, Dan? As far as I'm concerned, it was a quarter pounder. If I remember correctly, it was that cheddar cheese sauce. So it was, you know how that melted, that processed, you know, like Philly cheese stuff, like the Philly cheesesteak? That kind of sauce. But it was popular. I remember it was popular in 91 after they had won their first championship. Because I was dating Leslie Presley at the time and I remember having my first McJordan with Leslie Presley.
Quarter pounder burger with bacon and special barbecue sauce named after.
Oh, bacon.
Yeah.
Okay, so no cheese. All right. I just remembered it wrong.
Apparently they also did it as a big 33 for Larry Bird in Boston.
So it was the same thing.
It was the same thing.
Same thing, but it was, you know, and by the way, that if it was also when I went to Ireland, we were in Dublin and it was like our first couple of nights there, and we were walking down Grafton and there's a McDonald's on Grafton, and you don't go to other countries to go to McDonald's, but we did because they had burgers representing different American cities. And so they had a Chicago burger, and we were like, well, we have to go and try it. And it was that. It was like barbecue sauce and bacon on a quarter pounder cheeseburger. It was pretty much that. And it doesn't represent Chicago in any way, shape, or form. I was like, what the hell is this? This is like, it's like a barbecue bacon cheeseburger, and this is the Chicago burger? I wanted to explain it to management, but they were just like, we don't care, you know? But I was like, I'm from Chicago. You guys don't know what's going on. You're Irish and you live in Dublin. I don't want you to think that this is what represents Chicago. I don't want anybody from Dublin to come to Chicago, order a burger, and think that that's what they're going to get. That represents Chicago in some way. Because it doesn't. At all. But that was the only reason we went to the McDonald's. was because of that. So, all right, another celebrity endorsement here. Because with Michael Jordan, he needed to endorse more things. So, another celebrity endorser here before we take a break. Danica Patrick. When Danica Patrick first emerged on the auto racing scene, she was something of a novelty, and that's exactly what appealed to the website domain brokers at GoDaddy. They teamed up with Patrick in 2006, and the relationship lasted nearly a decade. In a nod to professional symmetry, Patrick joined forces with GoDaddy again for the final races of her career at the Daytona 500 and the Indy 500 this past year. Hey, remember when GoDaddy had those Super Bowl commercials with her, and then you'd have to see the rest of them online, right? Weren't they all they were all racy? Well, right. no pun intended, but they were all sort of sexy, racy kind of thing,
right?
Yeah. GoDaddy. GoDaddy didn't have the talking baby. No, that's E-Trade, right? E-Trade had the talking baby?
Correct. E-Trade had the talking babies.
Yeah. I'm getting lost on a tangent of Super Bowl commercials. But anyway. All right. More celebrity endorsements. What products did you enjoy that were endorsed by celebrities? 312-981-7200. We're going to break here for Some Weather. That's one of my favorite songs from one of my favorite albums of all time. Lulu requesting some Tears for Fears, Sowing the Seeds of Love. Wild Card Wednesday year. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. I remember when that album came out, Dan. I played it all the time, and it got to the point where somebody got into my car. It was in my tape deck because it was in my tape deck like for I don't know 5 months straight. Get in the car, and somebody would go, please, please, don't play this album again, please. And I'd be like, shut up, you're in my vehicle, and you will listen to Sowing the Seeds of Love, and you will like it. Now shut your mouth and enjoy. Then I'd get punched in the mouth. But no, because I'm one of these people that, you know, when I like an album, I will play the hell out of it. I mean, I will play it. Oh, I will wear it out. And Seeds of Love, the Tears for Fears album, is way near the top of the list of one of the most quickly worn out albums that I ever had. I adore that record. So, all right, Steve Grzanich is coming up at 5 o'clock with the opening bell, and coming up soon, here are the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right, we are talking about some of our favorite celebrity endorsements of products. 312-981-7200. Hey, Dan, you know what's one of the weirdest ones now that's out there?
What's that?
Is the Ray Liotta
Chantix.
Chantix. Yeah, the Chantix. He just looks, doesn't he look like he's stoned?
He definitely has an odd look about him, especially when he's reading the script and laughing for some reason. That part of it particularly sticks out to me.
I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, this is really weird. Like, Ray Liotta is acting weird here. And, that's the one now that's that one. That one's a little distracting. I have to say, you know, I don't know. I don't know if it's really good. Because we all know Ray Liotta. We've seen Ray Liotta. Ray Liotta doesn't always kind of look like that, and he certainly doesn't always act like that. If you, you know, remember Ray Liotta from many of the motion pictures that he's been in. But I think it's a bad advertisement for the product. Because I when I watch it, I think, man, I'm not going to take that stuff if it turned Ray Liotta into a zombie. Because I guess if you take Chantix, you turn into a Ray Liotta zombie. I don't want that. They didn't list it as one of the side effects, though. Every other side effect, you know, leading up and including death, is listed, but it doesn't say you may become a Ray Liotta zombie. Yeah, he looks like, you know what he looks like in that commercial. He looks like somebody who would enjoy pocket meat.
So the everyman.
The everyman. All right, how about 50 Cent? Curtis Jackson, also known as 50 Cent, was picked to shill for vitamin water when the company saw him holding a bottle in a photo. In 2004, Jackson signed a deal with vitamin water's parent company, which landed him a minority stake in the business. That ownership percentage converted into major cash, estimates put it at close to $100 million when Coca-Cola purchased the company for $4.1 billion. $100 million he made for vitamin water. Wow. That's pretty good, man. He's set. That's a lot more than 50 cents.
Well, you know, and it's funny you mention that because during the Bitcoin craze, there was a story about how I forget if he did a concert and he got paid in Bitcoin or he did an album and he got paid in Bitcoin and then he forgot about it. And when the craze hit, he made $7 million off of it.
Oh, my God.
I just love the fact he's like the accidental spokesperson. He happened to have a bottle of vitamin water in his hand during commercials.
Right.
And he did this.
Yeah. He happened to have a
Bitcoin
bottle of water. Well, you know what? The guy was shot a bunch of times. Good for him. You know? He survived being shot a bunch of times. Let him earn $100 million for holding the vitamin water in his hand. Is he drinking vitamin water in the club video? Because I know he's like on a treadmill.
He is not drinking vitamin
he's
water.
He's just regular water on the...
I don't think he's consuming any water.
Oh,
it would take away from the optics.
I thought he was on the treadmill. Isn't he on the treadmill?
Oh, no, he's on the treadmill.
Right? And he's all hooked up, right?
Yep.
Isn't he like... Is he hanging upside down in that video, too?
And he's doing pull-ups, yeah.
Yeah, all right. Why do I know that video?
Sit-ups.
Sit-ups. Why do I know that video?
Because it was everywhere.
Yeah, that's probably what it is. It's your birthday. Alex Trebek. How about this one? Alex Trebek spends most of his days moderating trivia hijinks over... Really, is that what it is? Jeopardy is trivia hijinks? Because that makes it sound like, yeah, hey, crazy. Yeah, Jeopardy. What is it, hijinks? I'm sure Trebek would not enjoy it. Jeopardy being called trivia hijinks. But he also appears in some commercial breaks for Colonial Penn Life Insurance. Yes, oh, that's right, Colonial Penn. Trebek has also been a spokesman for the company since 1998. And he also endorsed DirecTV, Emerald Downs Racetrack, and the National Fluid Milk Processor Promotion Board. The hell does that mean? What is that?
And when I saw it, I figured you would just know what that
is. I was going to say, how come I'm not on this board? What? The National Fluid Milk Processor Promotion Board. Wow. All right, I have no idea what that is. Alex Trebek and his trivia hijinks.
They might be the gut milk people.
Oh, is that what it is? All right. Well, he's got a mustache. He doesn't, you know. The gut milk thing was all about milk mustaches. Yeah. All right. How about this? 847 area code says Fram oil filter with Muhammad Ali. Why don't I remember that? I don't remember the Fram oil filter with Muhammad Ali. Keith in Kansas, Robert Conrad with a battery on his shoulder, daring you to knock it off. I thought that was hilarious. Yeah, was that Duracell or was it EverReady? I think it was Duracell. I can't remember, but he put a battery on his shoulder. He's like, I dare you to knock it off.
Duracell.
It was Duracell. All right.
I'm sorry, EverReady.
Oh, it's EverReady. Okay.
I dare you to knock this off. I dare you to compare anybody's batteries, anybody. With alkaline power cells. I'm trying to beat them for long life. You know what? You can't. The things that really eat up energy, like calculators and cassettes, you can't buy a longer lasting all purpose power system than gold, red, and black alkaline power cells from EverReady. Come on, I dare
you. Because you know how much power those calculators consume. Chicago's own Robert Conrad from right here in Chicago. 331 area code says, how about Carl Malden for American Express? Oh, yeah, don't leave home without it. Or my nose. 773 area code says, Ron Palillo in the 70s for Just Pants. What? The store Just Pants? Like the Just Pants clothing store that you would see in the mall? They had Horseshack? Wow. Horseshack selling pants. Gary Berghoff for Krakow CB Radios. Those were two awesome retro 70s endorsements, Gary Berghoff. Well, you know why? Because he played Radar. He was on the radio always trying to contact people all the time. That's why it's a natural choice, Gary Berghoff for CB radios. But Ron Palillo for Just Pants. All right. Okay. How about J.K. Simmons? We are farmers. Bum ba dum bum 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 bum. Those are actually pretty funny commercials. J.K. Simmons. My dad. It's the guy from Whiplash. Oh, man. Okay. How about this? Sofia Vergara. Modern Family star Sofia Vergara has been a popular celebrity spokesperson for years, and she claims to have used Head & Shoulders for the past two decades. Yeah, she's got another one, though, right? Doesn't she have, now she's got a fashion line, doesn't she have perfume or something?
I don't know about that, but she has the coffee maker. I know that one for sure.
Oh, right, right. Yeah. She's also all over the... How about George Clooney with the Nespresso? Have you seen the latest one where he's dressed in armor?
Did see that one, yeah.
I don't understand those commercials. Wonder how much money Clooney's making for that. You know? You got to be making a pretty penny, you know?
Or he's like an investor in the company. That was what I thought it might be.
Yeah. I mean, the guy doesn't need... The guy's not hurting. All right, we have to take a break here. That tone means I'm late and we have to go to news, which is next. Nicolette Larson with A Lot of Love.
Love it.
You love that song?
Forgot about that song.
That was a big one. That was a big hit. Philip requested that one on Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, that was big. Like, I want to say 78, 79, something around that.
So I was like 7 when I loved that song.
Yeah, I guess you were, yeah. it is Wild Card Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything. Yeah. 312-981-7200. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. We're here till 5 a.m. We're talking about classic celebrity endorsements of products and some of the more memorable ones. How about Matthew McConaughey? You guys ever hear of him? Dan, you ever hear of him?
No. Not like
that's
every
what
day.
I love about these high school girls, man. I get older, they stay the same age.
Yes, they do.
Yes, they do. Let me tell you this. The older you do get, the more rules are going to try to get you to follow. You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
That's right. Endorsements often work best when they fit the personality of the celebrity, and that proves to be the case with Matthew McConaughey and the Lincoln Motor Company. Yeah, those commercials are weird, man. Have you seen the one where he's on a ferry and he's looking through his journal where he was drawing stuff?
Oh no!
And there's a callback. You remember the one where he's driving and there's a oh no man I'm not gonna hit the buffalo.
Oh,
remember
that's
there's
my favorite. Yeah, the buffalo just in the middle of the road.
They stare down at each other like Matthew McConaughey looking at oh man I better go around the buffalo. That is not gonna work out, man. Well, now there's a callback to that in the one where he's on the ferry. He's talking to himself. He's like, don't mistake. Oh, I can't remember what is it for weakness or something like don't mistake being quiet for weakness. And he's looking through his journal, I guess, that he's been keeping track of as he's driving his Lincoln wherever the hell he's driving it. And he's got a drawing. He drew the buffalo there's a sketch inside his sketchbook. There's like a sketch of the buffalo. Yeah. I can't remember what he actually says in it, but it's just weird sort of, you know, like True Detective, you know, at this point is like a documentary, I think, you know, like the stuff that he was talking about in True Detective is like, man, that wasn't a script. I just think they were like, Matthew, just give us your philosophy on what's happening in the world right now and make it as weird as possible. Crush a beer can explain what the beer can is, man. While McConaughey began his career as a goofy hunk in films like Dazed and Confused and The Wedding Planner. Wait a minute. So we got trivia hijinks, and now suddenly Wooderson is a goofy hunk? Who wrote this?
Slacker.com?
Slacker.com. Named after a Richard Linklater movie. He's not a goofy hunk. Now, maybe he played a couple of goofy hunks in those rom-coms he did in the 90s, but he's not... Wooderson is not a goofy hunk. His evolution into a sophisticated actor in the Dallas Buyers Club and True Detective allowed him to endorse more sophisticated brands like Lincoln. No mention of Wild Turkey here. Yeah, no mention of Wild Turkey.
I'm sorry, it's Stacker, not Slacker.
Stacker?
Stacker wrote this
article. Okay, Stacker. Okay. Well, whoever is at Stacker describing Jeopardy as trivia hijinks and Dave Wooderson as a goofy hunk needs to be stacked somewhere.
Jason Kessler.
Jason Kessler. Goofy hunk. This man is not a goofy hunk.
Say, man, you got a joint?
No, not on me, man.
It'd be a lot cooler if you did.
This is really one of the greatest characters in the history of cinema. And I'm not exaggerating on that one. He's one of the best characters ever. All right. Brooke Shields. When she was just 15 years old, Brooke Shields starred in an ad for Calvin Klein's that featured the famous line, "What gets between me and my Calvin's? Nothing." Man, that was so controversial when that. I remember that. Because I'm the same age as Brooke Shields. Brooke Shields and I are, I think, are just a few days apart, actually. And I remember I was like, you know, I was her age, and I was like, whoa, what's going on with that commercial? She was no stranger to controversy at that point, having starred as a child prostitute in Pretty Baby, and she was barely clothed castaway in the Blue Lagoon. 37 years after her original 1980 ad campaign, she starred in another Calvin Klein ad at age 52, modeling the brand's lingerie. How did I miss that? All right. Now, has she done any other endorsements? I mean, obviously, Calvin Klein's the most.
Yeah, I want to say she's done something for like a home, something like a furniture or home design line.
Yeah, I think you're right. But she's done more. I think she's done more. I'm positive she's done more than just Calvin Klein. Oh, wait. She's done makeup and stuff, right? Cover Girl, things like that, I think. If she hasn't, she should, because she's beautiful. But I think she's done sort of either perfume or makeup, that kind of stuff. What about that weirdo commercial with Natalie Portman? It's a perfume commercial. Those perfume commercials are just ridiculous. You remember in SNL, Dan, in the late 80s when they did an Obsession commercial, and it was a series of Obsession commercials. It was Phil Hartman and Jan Hooks were in one of them, and it was hilarious. That was back when the Obsession commercials were like the first set of perfume commercials where you watched it, and afterwards you go, "The hell was that? What was that even advertising? I don't even understand what that was." So they did this really great. I mean, obviously, Jan Hooks and Phil Hartman, two of the funniest people ever that ever lived, did this really hilarious takeoff on Calvin Klein Obsession. And they've done a bunch of them on SNL, a bunch of those takeoffs. But I think, there's one, this Natalie Portman one. Have you seen this one, Dan? Natalie Portman.
There's a new one. I only remember the old one with her escaping a marriage via helicopter.
Oh, no, it's a new one. There's a new one where she's like running down the beach or something, and she's in a house with a guy and she leaves him and then like looks at the camera and goes, "What would you do for love?" What the hell is this? Those commercials are ridiculous. You know, and I love Natalie Portman. I think she's fantastic. What about the one with Kristen Stewart? Have you seen this one?
I have not.
Kristen Stewart, I think it's a perfume commercial, and it makes no sense whatsoever, but it's got Kristen Stewart in it. She's lovely to look at, and she's like breaking through cloth and jumping through. I don't even know what the hell it is. I want to say it. It's a perfume. Maybe it's a Calvin Klein commercial. I don't know. There's that. We see you've got Natalie Portman running around. Okay, making no sense. What would you do for love, or whatever the hell it is? You got Kristen Stewart jumping through hoops and stuff, barely dressed.
That would be Gabrielle, the new fragrance from Chanel.
that's Kristen Stewart.
Yes.
Okay, she's lovely. I like looking at the commercial. It just doesn't make any sense. And then the other one is Keira Knightley, and they're all very similar. Like, right. They're similar in the way that they look. There's the same sort of like types, the same body types and stuff. And I don't know if they're all for the same, and if they're all for the same company, but they all, you know.
Yes, Keira Knightley is also Chanel.
Okay, so then maybe that's the kind of woman that they want to advertise to, that who looks like that,
right?
Because they're all this, they're all very, very similar, and they're all lovely and beautiful ladies, and I don't mind looking at them at all. But the commercials are just weird.
The queen of those, though, is Charlize Theron.
Oh yeah,
all of those. I mean, there's a new one out right
Charlize
now.
Charlize Theron, yeah,
and like just again, it's I don't know how she makes a catwalk into everything she walks on, but somehow she does in those commercials.
Yeah, I would love her to do a commercial as Furiosa. That would be badass if she did like a perfume or one of those weird designer commercials, but she's dressed as Furiosa. Come on, man. I'd buy stock in that company if they did that. I'd start wearing ladies' perfume if the spokesperson was Furiosa, if she was dressed like Furiosa. All right. We have to break here. We got weather coming up here, and then we'll take a break, and we'll come back, and we've got more celebrity. What are your favorite celebrity endorsements and weirdo perfume commercials? Welcome back, everybody. Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. That is any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. And yeah, it's that was Carol from Brookfield who wanted to hear Bob Welch with Precious Love. And that ends our theme of love songs this morning. Okay. Hey, we haven't had a TV theme this morning, have we?
It's a strange morning because a lot of the songs have themes. We did political themes earlier in the show. We did love songs.
Yep.
There is an anniversary song after 4:30, and then after 4:45, we will get our TV theme.
We'll get at least one TV theme song, which on Wildcard Wednesday, we always get at least one. All right. Thanks for participating, everybody. It's fun. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Welcome back. We're here live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we were talking about some memorable and sometimes weird celebrity endorsements for products and your favorite celebrity-endorsed commercials. How about Peyton Manning? Peyton Manning is one of the most recognizable faces in sports, and as an elite quarterback in the NFL, his approachable everyman demeanor made him the highest paid endorser in the league with $12 million endorsements a year. How many? He's got a ton, right? Is he at Nationwide? Is on your side? He's on that with whoever the hell the country guy is.
Brad Paisley.
Oh, okay. Brad Paisley. But he's got that one. He's got a ton, right? Peyton Manning?
Papa John's.
Yeah. Yeah. What about his brother? Does he have any?
They did the football on your phone.
That's right. Which of course was played here on the show. Rick Geezer brought that in. All right. Peyton Manning's funny, man. I think Peyton Manning's very funny. He was very when he's hosted Saturday Night Live a couple times. He's very funny. Oh, look at this. We got a ton of texts coming in. 847 Sam Elliott doing the beef commercials. I love beef. It's what's for dinner. Good Sam Elliott. You gotta love Sam Elliott. Steve says Broadway Joe in legs. Yeah, Joe Namath wearing pantyhose in the legs commercial. 331 says, how about Ricardo Montalban for Chrysler? Oh, yes.
Corinthian.
Corinthian, yes. Corinthian leather. 815 area code. Orson Welles for wine. Yeah, Gallo wine. Now, Dan, have you ever seen the outtakes?
I have.
Oh, my God. Orson Welles bombed. Like, I believe he drank 5-6 gallons of wine while they were trying to shoot this thing. And because the two people that are in the commercial with him, because they have to pour wine. And he keeps screwing up his lines because he's completely annihilated, Orson Welles. And so they have to keep re-pouring, like, and pouring over and over again. Like, I can't remember how many takes it is, but it's on YouTube. You can see just Orson Welles drunk Gallo. We serve no wine before it's time. There's also, I believe, audio of him getting notes from a director while doing a commercial for frozen peas.
Right.
And you got, first of all, you know, he's just doing I realize he's just doing like a frozen pea commercial and you're the director of the frozen pea commercial. You don't give notes to Orson Welles. Like, if I were the director of anything in Orson Welles, I would not give him one note. He's Orson Welles. You know? One of the greatest filmmakers that has ever lived and one of the greatest directors of all time. You don't give Orson Welles notes. This guy, who was in charge of the Frozen Pea commercials, was giving him line readings, and Orson Welles was not having it. Doug Plank for Watertight Basements. Oh, yeah, I kind of remember that. Steve Ontiveros for Hairline Creations. Dan, you're too young to remember Steve Ontiveros, right?
I am too young.
Oh, he was a handsome cub. Wild Bill says George Brett endorsed Preparation H. Well, that's the thing. You know, George Brett, arguably one of the best baseball players that's ever played the game. But the first thing that I think of when I think George Brett, the first two things that I think of when I think George Brett, and this is really a shame. It's a damn shame because George Brett is truly one of the greatest baseball players of all time. And the first two things that I think of, if you mention George Brett, are hemorrhoids and pine tar. Those are the first two things. And this guy has some incredible numbers, has played played baseball for a long time, one of the best pro baseball players of all time. And seriously, the first thing if you say George Brett to me, the first thing I think of is hemorrhoids and pine tar. That's the first thing I think of. And that's really too bad. 815 area code says the H. John Benjamin for Arby's is really weird. Yes, it is. Emo says Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble for Winston Cigarettes. We've played that audio a bunch of times, and it's fantastic. You know, a children's cartoon endorsing cigarettes with Fred and Barney smoking away. 312 area code says Macho Man Randy Savage and Pocket Meat. Wait a minute, what? It's Slim Jims.
I think we established yesterday.
So you can put that as Pocket Meat.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so it says, snap it to a Slim Jim. Oh, yeah. So, by the way, I'm looking at the TV, Dan, on Channel 9. As you know, we always have and Jeremy Colleton is on right now. They're like showing like a press conference, and they're showing him at the practice. He looks like he's 12 years old. He's at the dry erase board, and he's like writing out plays and stuff at the practice. And I'm like, who is this 5-year-old who's? He looks like he looks 10. He's 33 years old. So I'm 20 years older than this guy, and he's now coaching the Blackhawks. He looks like he's 11 years old. I thought he was giving a presentation, you know.
Mm-hmm. I remember one of our past, when did you last feel old?
Yeah.
You know, somebody texted in, was when I realized I was older than every Major League Baseball player. And then you said, it's also when you realize that you're older than some of the coaches.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm 20 years older than the coach of the Chicago Blackhawks. I want to let that sink in for a second. I am 20 years older than the coach of the Chicago Blackhawks. You know, I was looking at some of the players are older than him. They're probably looking at him going, who is this kid?
Four of them.
Yeah.
And, I think Kevin Powell said Brent Seabrook played with him.
Seabrook played. All right. Well, that wasn't big news at all in the morning. I wasn't shocked at all at 8 o'clock in the morning when I got the news that Quenneville got fired. That wasn't shocking at all. It didn't make me angry at all. I wasn't confused and angry for the entire day. All right. Let's break. News is coming up next, then we'll talk more about celebrity endorsements. Learning something new this morning. That's a request for Wildcard Wednesday. You made Wildcard Wednesday! Multiple texters requested this. Gordon Lightfoot's The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. The anniversary is this weekend. Wow. Multiple texters knew that?
Yep.
That's astonishing. Remember the episode of Seinfeld where Elaine says, they were talking about the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, and Elaine says, that was Gordon Lightfoot, and she's like, Gordon Lightfoot was the ship, right? Edmund Fitzgerald was the artist. Gordon Lightfoot was the ship. And Jerry goes, yeah, it was struck by the Cat Stevens. That's the episode where you find out that that Kramer knows everything about any kind of nautical crash that has happened, any kind of sea crash that's happened. He has all the details.
Before we get too far away, we did promise a TV theme for 4:45, but your dad called in, and you know, when your dad calls in, we make an instant request.
Oh, he made a request?
He wanted to hear this because it's a song, much like Your Tears for Fears, that he played nonstop incessantly when it came out, and it's this.
Oh, yeah. My dad, Shy Coltrane. That's the artist, Shy Coltrane. I think that was her only hit, "Thunder and Lightning" by Shy Coltrane. And I can attest to the fact that my dad played that song all the time. Not that I'm complaining, because it's a great song. But yes, Dan, my dad was not exaggerating when he said he played the hell out of it, and he did. It was one of his favorite songs of all time. I am living proof that he played the hell out of Shy Coltrane's "Thunder and Lightning." All right. Thank you for the instant request, for playing the instant request for my dad. Here's a text. We're talking about celebrity endorsements, maybe the worst, the weirdest, or the most fun, and the products that they endorse. 312-981-7200. Eddie Volkman, Eddie, my main man, Eddie, thank you for listening. Eddie Volkman says, my father, Harry Volkman, did a short-lived commercial for some supplemental life insurance company. One day, while sitting in a bar, I saw his commercial back-to-back with my auto insurance commercial, and I thought, there's the family legacy, father and son insurance salesman. That's pretty funny. Do you think the local programmers knew what they were doing? Were they like, let's put the Volkman family back-to-back for their insurance commercials? Mike from Novak Construction says, Nancy Walker for Bounty paper towels. The thing about that, though, Mike from Novak Construction, and by the way, you guys got the Thanksgiving stuff up quick, man. It was like literally November 1st, your Thanksgiving stuff was on the roof, and all of that crazy Halloween stuff was gone. But here's the difference, Dan, about Nancy Walker for Bounty paper towels. She didn't play Nancy Walker. She played a character. So it wasn't like, hi, I'm Nancy Walker, here's Bounty. She played, was her name Marge? And she was a waitress. She played a waitress in a diner. I think it was Marge. Her name was Marge. So she actually wasn't like, I am celebrity Nancy Walker, here, enjoy.
Rosie.
Rosie, right, Rosie. That's it, of course, Rosie. The quicker picker-upper. And she was a real smart aleck, too, Rosie. Like somebody would spill something, you know, on the counter, because that's how she would have to pull the Bounty paper towels out because there's some idiot in the diner at the counter is always spilling stuff. So a guy spills like a cup of coffee. She goes, nice going, hot shot. Like she's a real, like, you keep talking like that, Rosie, you're going to blow your tip. That's not going to. 708 area code, Keanu for that motorcycle company. Yeah, those are weird too, man. Those are weird commercials too. Keanu's a weird dude though, so. Peter in Decatur said another Joe Namath was Noxema. Oh, yeah. By the way, you know what nobody has mentioned? O.J. Simpson for Hertz Rent-A-Car. Nobody.
We did it. We got Glenn called in with that one. I was typing it up for him.
Oh, yeah. Who can forget that one? All right. How about Oprah Winfrey? The most sincere celebrity endorsements happen when the celebrity actually uses the product. Oprah Winfrey has struggled openly with her weight for years, so her longtime pairing with Weight Watchers feels quite uniquely authentic. As an added bonus, Oprah sits on the board of the corporation and invested heavily in the company. This has made her hundreds of millions of dollars in profit. Ah, yes. Oprah and Weight Watchers. Ray Charles, you got the right one, baby. 1991 Super Bowl commercial for Diet Pepsi. While Charles had appeared in Coca-Cola commercials in the 60s, the pop culture aficionados associate the singer with Pepsi thanks to this ultra-popular ad campaign. Will Ferrell, most celebrities are happy to admit that they do endorsements because they require a small amount of work and they get paid handsomely. Will Ferrell, on the other hand, decided to make commercials for regional beer brand Old Milwaukee because he likes, quote, good crappy beer. Wait, I don't even remember this. Will Ferrell did Old Milwaukee commercials?
Yeah, they're, as I said, they were only regional. Some are on YouTube.
Oh, man, I got to watch those. Because he likes good, crappy beer. Well, the Old Milwaukee is good, crappy beer. The series of ads mainly aired mainly in local markets. In 2012, he starred in a Super Bowl commercial for the brand as well, but it only aired in North Platte, Nebraska. Yeah, oh, I'm going to have to look these up. Will Ferrell doing Old Milwaukee commercials? That's pretty awesome. Let's see. 847 area code says Mean Joe Green and the jersey for the Coke commercial. Classic. Classic. Olympic skier Susie Chaffee, call me Susie Chapstick. Ah, yes, I remember that. 815 area code, Brooke Shields is now doing Lazy Boy. Oh, yeah, she's doing Lazy Boy commercials. That's what it was. That's what we couldn't quite put our finger on. It's the Lazy Boy commercials, yeah. 773 area code says Marie Osmond does Nutrisystem. That's another one of those personally endorsed, I actually use the product things. 847 area code, Johnny Depp buries his jewelry in a desert. Oh, that's another one. I think that's for a men's fragrance, right?
Yeah, it's definitely a fragrance.
And it's Johnny Depp in the dressed like, you know, multiple scarf weirdo Johnny Depp, and he's like digging a hole in the desert.
Yeah, Dior.
Those are the dumbest. I'm telling you, those are the most ridiculous, weirdest commercials. Anything that involves like a scent are ridiculous. 773 area code says my vote goes to Wilford Brimley, the angriest looking promo man a medical supply company could have ever found. You got diabetes? Check your blood. Check it every day, or I'm going to kick your ass. I'm Wilford Brimley. I got diabetes. Uh, 630 area code says Bruce Willis as Bruno selling wine coolers. Oh, yeah. Hey, who were the two dudes? Bartles and James, right? And they those guys weren't Bartles and James, right? They were actors.
Right, they were actors.
They were actors portraying Bartles and James. Ross says, "How about Aaron Rodgers in the State Farm insurance commercials?"
Yeah.
All right. Let's see, George Foreman. He did the George Foreman grill. Well, we know that. That's where he's made most of his money. The old George Foreman grill. Of which both you and I and Esmeralda have owned one over the years. Speaking of Esmeralda, Esmeralda will be back on the show Friday.
Yeah.
She's going to come in 2 o'clock and hang out with us for 3 hours. Skip Skipley's going to show up, and we're going to do some regular features that we always do with Esmeralda, and we'll catch up with her, the lovely Esmeralda Leon, who we miss terribly here on the show on a regular basis, on a daily basis. But we're going to have her come back every few weeks to make an appearance here and hang out with us for most of the show. So that's going to be up on Friday morning. All right. Let us take a break, shall we? Let me enjoy giving you the forecast. 301 area code requesting Milton the Monster theme song. Why don't I know this? Milton the Monster.
Only aired for three seasons, 65 to 68.
That was the first three seasons of my life, so that's probably why I don't remember.
ABC, Milton the Monster, a Frankenstein-looking monster with flat top, seemed hollow head, which emitted various quantities of white steam or smoke based upon his mood or situation.
Oh. I would probably recognize the image if I saw it. I probably would. So. All right, well, there you go. There's our final Wild Card Wednesday. We're going to have another Wild Card Wednesday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to jump in. We're back to celebrity endorsements of products. And coming up at 5 o'clock is Steve Grzanich. And coming up next, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right, let's get back to some of these celebrity endorsements. Taylor Swift, who, by the way, the candidate that Taylor Swift endorsed didn't work out too well. You heard about that, right, Dan?
I did, yeah.
Yeah. It was a Tennessee candidate that she endorsed and went out of her way to talk about and post about, and that person lost. Taylor Swift and kittens. That was the secret recipe for Diet Coke commercials featuring the pop star, whose partnership with the brand began in 2013. Billboard called the ads the cutest Diet Coke commercial you're ever going to see, and the campaign coincided with Swift transforming from country music darling to full-fledged pop princess. She's done other stuff, right, hasn't she? Besides Diet Coke? She must, right?
Yeah, I'm sure there's other things.
Drake. Hip-hop artist Drake has a favorite soda, and that soda's Sprite. At least that's what he'd like you to believe based on his commercials, which started in 2010 and portray the soft drink as a liquid muse he uses while to write his raps. The partnership lasted for 5 years as Drake became one of the biggest names in hip-hop and found his lyrics printed on Sprite cans in 2015. Hey, I just saw a commercial with animated... Is it Drake? It's like a sort of claymation, Santa Claus is coming to town kind of animated thing. And it's for Sprite Cranberry, which I'm interested in because I enjoy cranberry juice very, very much. And I guess it's only going to be around for the holidays because it's cranberry flavored. But it's like Sprite Cranberry, and I want to say it's an animated Drake. It is an animated hip-hop star. I'm getting Drake all mixed up now. I'm saying that he's the one that's animated and drinking Sprite Cranberry, and he's the one that has the 9 million pairs of Air Jordans. So. All right, Jennifer Garner wants you to sign up for Capital One Venture. She even wants her dad to sign up for one. The partnership started in 2014 and led to a prolific cottage industry of Jennifer Garner ads, fans of her commercial work. Jay-Z, the rapper, has a stake in Ace of Spades Champagne. He mentioned the brand back in 2006 on his song Show Me What You Got as an affront to offensive comments from a Cristal executive. He bought the entire Ace of Spades label in 2014. I've never even heard of Ace of Spades. You know what Ace of Spades is? The Motorhead song. That's what it is. Don't care about the champagne. The Motorhead song, and it'll always be a Motorhead song. Shaquille O'Neal. Shaquille O'Neal is no stranger to endorsements. As one of the most beloved NBA players in history, O'Neal has endorsed everything from Buick to Taco Bell to Radio Shack. Even in his post-playing career as an NBA analyst on TNT, he's still raking in the dough from endorsements like Pain Relief Medicine, Icy Hot, and a Carnival Cruise Line.
One of my favorite commercials on the air right now is one of his general spots.
Yeah.
And he's talking about how he didn't have insurance when he was younger, but as he got older, he warmed up to the idea. But he's drinking a cup of coffee, and he just starts laughing into the line about how much, as he got older, he wanted to have insurance. And he breaks and just drinks a cup of coffee, and they just use that take.
They use that take?
It's like, all right.
I know the Icy Hot. I've seen that. That's all over the place, too. Radio Shack. That worked out real well. Yeah. Justin Timberlake. In 2003, Justin Timberlake signed a worldwide marketing deal with McDonald's, all revolving around the song I'm Lovin' It. The simple jingle became immensely popular, and it was only revealed later that the song was written specifically for the campaign instead of the other way around. So, wait a minute. How did I not know that Justin Timberlake wrote I'm Lovin' It?
Yeah, and sang it.
I'm like the president of the Justin Timberlake fan club. How did I not know that? And wow, what kind of money is he making on that? Hey, what's the commercial where he's sticking raspberries in? He's sticking blueberries into raspberries. Is it a yogurt commercial?
No, it's the five.
Oh, it's the drink. The drink thing.
Right, I think it's called Bai.
Yeah, where he's sticking blueberries into raspberries. Catherine Zeta-Jones, back in the early days of cell phones, each big brand fought for its customer base with a series of clever commercials. Verizon staked its future on a bespectacled man asking if people could hear him. And Sprint PCS had a mysterious man in a trench coat investigating cellular emergencies. T-Mobile opted to go the celebrity route with actress Catherine Zeta-Jones, who served as global spokesperson from 2002 until she was dropped in 2006. Okay. Kim Kardashian. Kim Kardashian, if you follow her Instagram account, oh, who doesn't? Who doesn't? I can't go to sleep at night until I've checked Kim Kardashian's Instagram account at least 5 to 10 times. It may seem like there's nothing she won't endorse. Diet teas, beauty products, gummy hair vitamins. They've all made her feed, but she was doing endorsements even before she became a pop culture staple as she is today. Skechers featured Kardashian in a Super Bowl ad for their Shape Ups line back in 2011. The company paid a lofty $40 million settlement in a year later in response to a class action lawsuit that disputed the shoe's health claims. Oh my God, really? Rob Lowe. Oh, the DirecTV commercials are hilarious. With old Rob Lowe. Those were hilarious. There's a funny subgenre of celebrity endorsements where the celebrity endorsers provide a little self-deprecating humor. Rob Lowe's DirecTV commercials are wonderful examples of this niche. The campaign featured Lowe and various alter egos as they tried to convince viewers to ditch cable and upgrade to Seattle. Satellite TV service. Unfortunately, the commercials were determined to be making false claims, and DirecTV parted ways with Lowe. Yeah. Jennifer Aniston. Jennifer Aniston rose to fame as a cast member of Friends more than 20 years ago, but she's still one of the highest grossing actresses in the country, and that's mainly because of her successful endorsement career. She's hyped Windows 95, Diet Coke, Smart Water, most recently Aveeno. Her commercial success can be attributed to her wholesomeness and general likability. And then this last one, Dan, blast from the past, John Hossman and Justin Long as a PC and a
Mac.
I almost forgot what they were called. So, all right. All right, let's break. By the way, speaking of TV, Dan Feinberg is going to join us tomorrow, but the news is up next after this.